please? Nancy, could you have a roll call?
Mr. Fox. Mr. Cockamo.
Here.
Councilman Dockerty.
Here.
Mr. Holly.
Here.
Mr. Tasco.
Here.
Mr. Stravinsky.
Here.
Ms. Nachusi.
Here.
Vice Chair Matt.
Here.
Chairman Coulter.
Here.
Captain Sizemore.
Here.
Mr. Curtis.
Here.
Mr. Burr. Ms. Walter.
Here.
Mr. Corn.
Thank you very much. Pursuant to Section 5 of the Open Public Meetings Act, this meeting has been duly advertised in accordance with law by publication in the official newspapers of the borough and by posting in Borough Hall by the borough clerk as part of the annual notice. This meeting is a quasi-judicial proceeding. Any comments or questions must be limited to issues that are relevant to what the board may legally consider in reaching a decision. Decorum appropriate to a judicial hearing must be maintained at all times. Stand now for a silent prayer and pledge allegiance.
With allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We will open the floor now to public comment for items not available on the agenda. Do we have any on Zoom?
We have two, but no hand raised.
Seeing none, we'll move on. Mr. Stott, any pending litigation?
Please report there is none.
Outstanding. Next item is other business. Traffic study requirement.
Mr. Chairman, I'm aware that the question was raised to the administrator regarding interpretation of the ordinance relating to the board having an expert review traffic situations for particular applications. That has to do with Section G of the ordinance, and it talks about and the reference to Mr. Ferragina was Ordinance 16-2019. That was the ordinance that was adopted with that number, but it's now formally as part of the ordinance. But in any event, the question raised was what are the implications? And particularly, the ordinance first starts off talking about it, and it's the escrow portion of the ordinance, which sets forth the board's ability to collect from an applicant an escrow fund to cover the board's expenses for their professionals. For their professional review and necessary testimony or reports. So the first part of the ordinance provides for that the board can hire experts to deal with issues that may be beyond the expertise of your regularly employed experts. So it then goes on to say that if, and I guess I should clarify that the ordinance says that if an application comes in, and your engineer is reviewing it for completeness and says, hey, you know what, there's an aspect of this application that really needs some expertise that's beyond the expertise you normally see. They can then recommend that to the board to engage an expert witness, I should say, to review that and then report to the board on it. If the engineer does that, then the board can engage those experts. Whether it be a planner consultant or whether it be a sound attenuation consultant or a lighting consultant, whatever the issue might be that is a particular concern in an application. The ordinance then goes on, so that this section of the ordinance deals only with planning board appointed experts for a particular application. Then the ordinance goes on to deal specifically with traffic. And it says that if the board decides that it needs expertise from a traffic standpoint and engages a traffic consultant, that there are minimum standards that consultant must do, minimum tasks that they must perform in their review. And they're set forth in Section 3, and it says that the minimum will include a study of 2 weekdays, 1 weekend, and at least 4 one-hour reporting periods per day, two of which must occur during peak hours in the location of the development. So that's the standard, that if you're going to engage an expert in traffic, those are the things that they're supposed to examine.
That would be for our expert.
For your
whatever the applicant wants to do.
The applicant can do what they want. That's up to the applicant, what they want to present, and what they want to present to the board, that's up to them. And if the board has concern about a specific area based upon your engineer's recommendation or based upon the board's recommendation, your engineer may not recommend it, but the board may feel when an application comes forward that, you know what, we've got an issue with this, we really need to have more information, then this board can on its own say, we're going to need our own professional.
And the board can also react. So like, in the event that they, an applicant's professional, whose qualifications are accepted by the board, makes a presentation, and after the presentation, we feel that there's a deficiency, we can act at that point as well.
Sure.
Right.
Correct. During the course of the application, if issues arise that the board needs to have more information on, that the board may do one of two things. The board may say to the applicant, you know what, you didn't do this, this, and this, go out and do those things and then come back to us. Or the board can say, we'd like to have our own independent analysis, in which case you will then engage your expert, and they will be paid out of the escrow fees that the applicant has to deposit. So that's the way the ordinance works. That's the way it was designed. That's the way it's set up. It's, I guess there was question whether or not this ordinance somehow implied a mandatory requirement upon an applicant to go to a certain extent in traffic review. And it doesn't. The applicant can do as much or as little as they want. They can do more. They can do less. They're presenting it, and the board weighs the presentation based upon, you know, what they've done and the information that they provided.
So, to clarify, so there's no checklist requirement for an applicant to provide any traffic study, correct?
There is not.
Or
there's not presently.
Yeah.
I mean, so that when someone comes in, an application is filed, it goes through a completeness process. And the borough has, in its ordinance, a checklist that says, in order to be complete, you have to provide all of this information. The traffic analysis is not one of the things on that list. So the way the statute works is, if the applicant meets all those items on the list, they're entitled to be deemed complete. But the statute also says, if the board decides they need more, the board can ask for it and say, okay, you're complete, we're going to schedule you. Our clock is ticking to act on your application, but we need more information, and you're entitled to ask for that.
Yep.
And I guess one thing I'll add. I mean, you could put on a checklist saying a traffic analysis, but if you're going to do that, the problem then becomes there needs to be some standard as to when do you do it and when do you not do it. If you have an application for a resident who's coming in to put a dormer on their home, which already has a pre-existing side yard setback violation of 1 foot, and the dormer is going to increase that, and you say, oh, well, now you need a traffic analysis. It doesn't make sense in that kind of situation.
In your experience, is there any planning boards that you've ever dealt with that has ordinance similar to that?
They don't put traffic analysis as a required situation.
And it doesn't only pertain to traffic, it pertains to anything that we feel that we need more professional guidance for.
Certainly. In the past, you in the steep slope areas, mm-hmm. you look for technical engineering with regard to steep slopes to make sure that there's stability in the slope, so that there's not going to be a problem with the proposed development. So, yes, you've done that in the past, mm-hmm. and you can continue to do that. So that's kind of the status. I don't know if there are any questions that I can try and respond to. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stack. Next item is review of draft ordinance for CBD and HBD. Mr. Dockery, you want to
teach? Yeah. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this has come out of some conversations that we actually Mr. McGoldrick and I and Mr. Romeyer had a meeting to discuss some possible amendments and some views that we can look into our ordinance to discuss some possible changes in the CBD and HPP zone. In my research, it had been at least 11 years since most of those ordinances had been updated or changed, and so it seemed right and a good time to take a look. So Mr. Romeyer engaged one of his colleagues, Nalika Afe, who's joined us this evening. She's prepared this draft for us. I can just give a little bit of a thought in terms of the timeline. This is somewhat unusual that it's sort of a draft ordinance change, it's sort of a concept review, if you will. The idea behind this is, you know, the governing body feels, I certainly feel very strongly, that any changes within the Chapter 150 code should be done collaboratively with this board. And we're the ones who have to be, you know, the planning board is the ones who have to apply these ordinances to these applications. And so we certainly want to get your feedback and edits to this draft. Any suggested changes may be incorporated into what's introduced at the next mayor and council meeting on October 12th. Then part of the process would be we come back to this board for consistency review, master plan consistency review, hopefully at the November 2nd meeting, and then we'll go from there. So welcome, Malika. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. So good evening, board members. My name is Malika Afte. I work with Mr. Romeyer and CME Associates. I'm a licensed professional planner. I have appeared before various boards throughout the state of New Jersey, including this one, I think, about 5-7 years back to the board. So, having said that, as Councilman Doty said, what we were tasked to do is look at the HPD as well as the CBD districts, the requirements and regulations there. One of the main goals of Atlantic Highlands Master Plan has been to, to limit appropriate density and appropriate locations, as well as to encourage some kind of aesthetic and structural developments and design standards, especially along their commercial corridor, namely First Avenue, the HPD and CBD districts. So what we did is take a look at both these zoning districts and see, as it is, our ordinance requires that mixed-use and commercial residential development is a conditional requirement. So it already is becoming a strict standard. We already have that on the onset. What we looked at is how are these regulations, how can they be even more enhanced to make sure the intent of the master plan, which is to make sure appropriate densities and appropriate development is occurring in appropriate districts. I'm sure all of you have seen the draft of the development. We've added some changes to maybe 1 and 2 bedroom market rate development. I know there is an overlay requirement of affordable housing, which itself has the 3-bedroom requirement. So we have added that 3-bedroom units only for affordable type of developments would be permitted. Otherwise, generally, it would be 1 and 2 bedroom units. This is also not just, making a stringent standard, but it is also typically seen in a commercial development, in a market rate housing, you only see 1 and 2 bedrooms in these kind of mixed-use development. So it's not something we are proposing which would be, an anomaly when it comes to commercial districts such as that. We also added certain design standards. One other thing, very important thing that we added in this is we added the density requirement. We looked at the HPD district as well as the CBD district. The minimum lot area requirements are about 4,000 for HPD and about 10,000 square feet for CBD. We studied the parcel data and we calculated about maximum density of 40 dwelling units to the acre would be a viable and efficient development for the type of parcels that are existing in both these districts. Another requirement that existed in your zones is we, the HPD district, the CBD district did permit, you know, not on-site parking requirements that could be met through providing parking on public parking lots or as such. One thing we did is, again, HPD parcels are a lot smaller than CBD, so we have added these changes that, you know, for the residential units in your HPD, parking would have to be provided on site. However, non-residential, which would be mainly your first floor, again, to see more commercial development, you could provide it through public parking lots or, you know, in an area within 300 feet of that parcel. But for CBD, again, these are larger lots. They can accommodate the parking that they are proposing for the development. Parking would be required to be provided on the lots itself where development is being sought. Those are the main, you know, conditional standards that we added. We then also looked at the design standards in our, you know, as applicable to our CBD and HPD, and added some standards to that. For example, for facade, you know, we want to see our first floor as more of a commercial development, where you want to see a more, you know, a viable commercial downtown. So we've added like a glazing clause, which is like at least 65% of the first floor needs to be glazed, needs to kind of give that inviting, you know, pedestrian-friendly atmosphere. We added certain other design standards, such as, you know, making sure that the building facade is more used of high-quality materials. The idea behind that was, again, we didn't want to provide the list of which materials, but then we want the, you know, developers or any potential developers to know that we want to see a certain amount of standards that is being seen in our commercial corridor. We don't want to see off-the-cuff vinyl siding and, you know, like EFIS kind of development along our streetscape corridor. Again, following the intent of the master plan, which is to make sure we have certain design standards for our commercial district. We added, you know, whenever there is HVAC units or some kind of mechanical units, they need to be buffered. We added, you know, plantings to be required. And we again mentioned to where the parking standards are. We haven't added any new ratios. The parking standards, what exists in our ordinance, are kept that way. For residential RSR standards, for non-residential, there is a parking ratio. We haven't changed that, but again, as I stated before, we added the clause that, you know, parking needs to be provided on site for the development, type of development that will be seen. Overall, in nutshell, these are the major changes that we're proposing. Again, keeping the main intent of the ordinance as is, but trying to kind of add a little more standards to see, you know, the intent of the master plan is being met through this ordinance changes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Do I have any questions from the board? Mr. Stein, one there,
just I'll let the board speak and then I can just jump in with a very brief comment.
Can I just ask a general question? What is the advantage to a density designation over perhaps using FAR as we currently?
So, thank you for raising that question. So FAR generally, you know, it's kind of goes hand in hand with what density is providing. However, FAR gives you more marking of the building. Like, for example, if you have an FAR of 3, in a three-story, in a ordinance where it allows only three-story buildings, you would take that to mean that if my lot was, for example, 10,000 square foot, my FAR would give me something like a 30,000 square foot building. Technically, I can put that the way, you know, either to, I know there are other factors like impervious coverage calculation, but that kind of gives you the idea of massing. That doesn't necessarily regulate the amount of units you want to see on the property. What density does is kind of gives you that picture as to if your lot was 10,000 square feet, you would be, for a density of 40 driving units to the acre, I would be able to put 8 units. But keep in mind, with that 8 units comes additional requirements, such as the parking has to be on the site. Then I have to follow the impervious coverage calculations. I have to make sure there are certain amenities being provided. You know, you might have to put in an elevator. So all these things are, you know, are discussed when it comes to density requirement. Again, we made that part of your conditional requirement, conditional standards, which makes it even more of a stricter requirement when you're trying to apply it in your CBD and HBD districts.
Thank you.
So I have a few questions, but I also have a lot of comments on this concept review of the ordinance. But I don't know, is this the appropriate time to go through all of them?
It actually is.
Okay.
The Borough Council is being proactive.
Okay.
Normally, you don't get the ordinance until it's been introduced
right by
the governing body, and they send it over to you for a consistency review.
Okay.
Simply to determine whether it's consistent with the master plan or not.
Okay.
And then if you have additional comments or recommendations, you can add them to the report that then goes back to the governing body. In this case, the governing body is basically giving you a first shot at the apple before they put it on their agenda and say, we'd like to hear from you, because if there are things that you're concerned about or recommendations you have, it may be great, we'll put it into the ordinance right away and get that done and refined before we introduce it and then send it over to you for consistency review.
Got it. Okay, thank you. So I can send a lot of these comments, you know, after if you'd like that. But generally, you know, I appreciate... I know this looks like it took a lot of work that Malvika you put into it, CME, and Councilmember Doherty put into it. And I also appreciate, Mr. Stive, your comments. There are things that I agree with in this ordinance. There are things that I completely disagree with. I think that on its head, regulating density is good. You know, there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of good things. But I think that that there's a lot of design guidelines in here that are unclear, and they go forth to discourage rather than encourage good design, and to almost limit creativity too. A lot of them are well intended, but they kind of miss a mark, and it comes across as an overreach in some instances. For instance, I think like the glazing minimums on the first floor is a great thing. Like, that does encourage a safe and interactive pedestrian environment. Limiting density is a great thing. Limiting the use of public infrastructure, parking, by private development is a good thing. Keeping like checks and balances, like, I think that this works really well for some of those things. But then a lot of the stuff is very opinion-based, unclear, and a little subjective, I think. I think limiting facade types, I've seen some good concrete panels out there and everything. I don't love vinyl siding, but somebody might love vinyl siding. So I don't know if those are fair to insist that a developer follow. So I guess, like, my point is, without going through every single thing, and I can do that, because I did go through this whole ordinance and mark it all up. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that, I just lost my train of thought, I'm sorry. I think that this does a really good job at limiting development. Kind of just like keeping it down so it doesn't overexceed things, like our carrying capacity downtown, for instance. I think it's a bit of an overreach with some of the design standards.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, those are great points. I just want to give, as Mr. Stein said, it is very good. I mean, you guys know your town the best than, you know, providing these. For example, bringing up that quality, that materials on the facade. You know, sometimes, again, it depends on the town, the borough. Some boroughs do not want to see, because probably they have had bad experience with EFIS materials. Some of them have seen an over, you know, development of vinyl siding. So again, this is at that point where if you don't want to limit that, we can remove those items. I think at other area in the standards, I did say high quality durable material. That is a, you know, it does come across as it's not strong enough, but again, it's giving that option to you as a board and to a developer to kind of make their case as to what type of development they are proposing, and they bring it to you and still show you, hey, I know this is vinyl siding, but look at the development, or look at the elevation. It's still going to meet the intent that the ordinance is trying to build. So what the design standard is try to make it is to give the board enough of guideline where the developer can, it doesn't show up as repetition of the same materials. It provides that broad avenue or that design different design examples for a potential developer to do. For example, that other there's another standard in which I said, you know, you want to see a similar type of facade, high quality facade from all point of views. Typically what we've seen, they'll do something on the main street, and everywhere else you'll have like a little, you know, just painted walls, or not even that. So, you know, again, it's not providing the type of materials, but it's saying that we want a building to look as a whole from all points, not just the front facade of the building. Mm-hmm. But, I would love to, if you don't mind, just if you could forward your comments, you can definitely incorporate that as the board sees fit and change it.
Okay.
Personally, I disagree. I like the design standards that are put on things, and I thought it offered enough flexibility for creativity within those guidelines.
Well, you know, I think it might be important, like, to discuss, like, maybe where the genesis of this comes from, because there has been in the past in these two zones projects when completed, public's not very happy with the way it looks, from whether it's the design feature, whether it's materials that are used. So that's really where the genesis comes from. Like, I agree, you don't want to limit an architect's ability to create a beautiful building because you can't use vinyl. But my feeling is that, you know, when I think vinyl siding, I'm not thinking, you know, something that's made of vinyl. I'm thinking like something that might like look cheap or out of place, something that might look better in R1 zone rather than the commercial historical zone. So I think that the reason that we felt that it needed to be included was because the public has kind of, I can tell you they've let me know, there's been talk, I've been on the board now for a long time, there's always talk about, you know, is this a Victorian town? You know, there are Victorian houses here, but are we Cape May? No. You know, there's plenty of bungalows in this town. Are we a bungalow town? No. So it's very difficult, I think, to set a design standard. You know, if you're in Cape May, it's a different story altogether. Cape May, the one of the main attractions to that town is the architecture. So when a developer comes in, they want to make sure that a developer is not going to put something super modern next to, you know, in the middle of a Victorian block. But at the same time, you know, I think rather than discourage the ability for the developer or an architect to create something beautiful using, you know, whatever modern materials is available, but at the same time, you don't want something that looks out of place. I know it's a very general, but I'm not going to name any names.
Yeah.
But like,
I agree. I with what you're saying. However, I think that they should be separated from a development ordinance and development regulation, you know, which really, I think that the heart of this is also to regulate the intensity of the development in the downtown, the two districts that are downtown. I think that the design standards should be looked at for sure, but like by, but with a whole overarching view of the town, not just picking and choosing these two areas that are downtown. You know, I know that they are the downtown area, they are on First Ave, but I think if we're going to do design standards, we should do whole picture design standards, not just for these two items. You know, yeah, so, yeah.
Most of the town is house-wise, residential-wise, is for the most, I'd say 80% of the houses are very well done. First Avenue is the biggest problem. First Avenue is the ugliest street in town. It just is because of, you know, giant silver buildings and little tiny brick buildings and all glass buildings and vinyl siding. And at 98% capacity on First Ave, it's going to be tough. It's going to be the same old story. Well, he has vinyl. Why can't I have vinyl? That's going to be the argument because, and there are vinyl sidings that are $150 a square.
Yeah.
Which are really nice. Yes. So just to say vinyl siding in general is kind of
a little tough. But my feeling is that when, I mean, we can work on the language, you know, for sure. And, you know, I think that's a good point, you know, like design and density aren't, you know, they don't necessarily have to be coupled, right? You know, you can focus on one and then focus on the other, you know, another time with a more, you know, sensitive outlook rather than just trying to couple them all together. I don't think that's a horrible idea at all.
I noticed you stay away from the parking. I'm smart. Because that's really the biggest issue. Until the parking gets solid, you can lower the density all you want, but nobody ever meets the parking standards, so that's a whole different issue. But until that gets fixed, we're going to have variances until the end of time.
And I mean, one thing, sorry, one thing I just want to add is, again, the design standards portion are in our, you know, the architectural design standards. So it is more treated like a waiver requirement. It won't affect your density and all those requirements are your variance requirements. So the standards are, you know, again, it's for the board to see where they see if there has been enough attempt made in making it an attractive looking building. Again, you know, overall picture of the building is being met, then it's up to the board to look at it as a newer design.
I still think, again, I appreciate that, and I'm not meaning to, you know, what is a better way to say beat a dead horse? I hate that. But, you know, I just think it's so subjective. What is an attractive building? You know, what is an attractive downtown? What is like a historically Victorian downtown? We can't do historically Victorian because we're doing it X amount of years later. So it's not a historic downtown. So I think cities everywhere go through this whole thing. So, and you know, I know it would just be a waiver, you know, not a variance, but. And maybe that is a language thing. Instead of saying shall, it's should. Like, it's more encouraging, you know, so that way you could not do it, but you're not, you wouldn't need a waiver or something. I just don't think it's, yeah, so.
No, you know what, yeah. I think you kind of nailed it.
I like
right
that.
There anyway, like, yeah. Yeah.
So, Malika, so you mentioned the difference between, you know, the variance, if an applicant were to exceed the density. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about this? So if an applicant were to come and propose something that exceeded the density, that's a D variance.
That's
right?
A D variance.
Yes.
That would be a D5 variance where they have to go through. You know, the proofs are much more intense. They basically have to prove that, hey, we are going above the density, but we still can, whatever the impacts of our development would be, we are trying to mitigate that. And, you know, that does become a tough hill to climb because the usually larger the density, there is probably a parking variance with it. There's probably an impervious coverage with it. There's probably a height variance with it. Like there are you know, it's not that clean when it comes to. So that's why the proofs become harder. You know, they have to prove that to the board as to how this development is still making sense.
I don't know. I was looking to find out. Do you know what we define a mixed-use building as?
So our ordinance, I did look into that. Our ordinance doesn't have an exact definition, but the way the ordinance is written, it says mixed-use as commercial slash residential. And then further down, if you read, it does say that we want to promote commercial on first floor and residential on upper floors.
Okay. So that's what I saw as well. So I do have some concerns about that because, you know, what I think is happening, and when I see the ordinance change this way as well, is, you know, we have proposals based on probably the cost of buying this land now. And the idea is we really want to build as many apartment buildings as we can, and we're just going to now say that, you know, 1,000 square feet on the bottom floor is going to be a commercial use, which is really probably a little office. I don't see that as being the commercial type of use that we want with a downtown First Avenue. More importantly, then we also are saying that we want all the parking to be basically on the property, and these properties are small, so they typically are underneath the building. So that takes away, so we have one little office, all parking, so what if we put windows in front of those cars? You know, are we really, like, that's what I see that this whole...
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a cheat code a little bit.
Well, I'm going to figure out, yes, exactly. Well, it's not a cheat code, it's not viable at this time based on the values that these, you know, developers are buying these properties at. That's what, how they're making their money. They're not necessarily making their money on providing a restaurant who needs all this space for cars. Why would they do that? Like, you know, with the value of homes, with the cost of the property, I just don't, I think what we're creating, not only in this ordinance, but in some of what our ordinance has to begin with, is that we're kind of creating, it's going to be a first ave of apartment buildings. And then we're not going to have that community of people who go to the convenience store, who go to the restaurant, and other people who play. That was the sense I was getting. And
what's the required retail space? That's minimum required.
So there, we can add there that is as a standard. There is no minimum.
It just has to be a retail space.
Yeah, it has to be. But, you know, I've seen in these type of developments is, you're very right, there's parking provided. But if you add a standard where you say, especially along the frontage, you want to see some kind of commercial, or also we've seen amenity space of the building, serving the building residents, you know, be it a gym, be it a co-working space or something, a lobby, you know, something attractive enough which shows that, you know, it's not, because the moment you allow a residential unit, you're not going to get that kind of, you know, interactive, grazing atmosphere on the first floor, because it's going to have privacy concerns. But if that standard, you know, is something that this board seats fit, can be added, where you have, you know, at least 40% of your front facade needs to be commercial or needs to be an amenity space and not just a, you know, the parking for the building or something like that standard can be added.
I think if you increase the commercial space, it would make a huge difference. Because you're exactly right. They put a little corner in and then put 50 apartment units in it.
It also limits the residential, and I think it also reinforces our live up here and eat and shop down here versus the office space, which I think is a really great point.
Well, I think if, you know, I mean, you know, to some extent, many years ago when Atlantic was dying for people to buy the property, nobody, you know, there wasn't a lot of foresight in this. I think we need to see what is happening.
That's the whole
point. Yeah. That's the goal. It is. So if we're, how do we not see that, you know, if we want to limit appropriate density, and aesthetics is important, but we're also talking about having a commercially viable place. So why would that be commercially viable if we've got some, you know, somebody doing, you know, some small office work, which is, might be happening in an 800-foot office, and the rest of under the building is parking. Like, and who's gonna walk anymore? Like, why would you even walk? You're gonna walk.
No, that's just a great point.
That's the feeling I'm getting from this, and then kind of taking a look at, you know, what we, what is already happening.
In order to, you know, keep this ordinance in line with the master plan, we have to keep on, it can't be created to discourage development. It should be encouraging development, but within certain parameters. And like, to your point, you know, like the whole idea of having a historic business district, and then it's just, it's like a parking lot on the first floor and then apartments up top, then you defeat the whole purpose altogether.
Yeah, I think it's great that, you know, more people can live there. I mean, that's fantastic if that's the case. I'm not disparaging that at all. I just think we have to take a look at our parking issue. If we keep demanding people to provide all this parking, well, where are they going to park? I don't know. Maybe, I just think we're also kind of low, so I don't know if they can do too much underground.
If you increase the retail by a lot, 50% of the front of the building, 60%, then it's going to decrease the amount of units because they're going to lose the parking. Yeah. It makes the building smaller just out of
Not even retail, am I correct? Like, we have no real definition.
It should be retail, too. There should be a requirement on retail and not offices.
It's the requirement to get in, but we really haven't defined said requirement.
Right.
And commercial, we've talked about in our master plan, but we haven't. You know, you're talking retail and thinking it, and all I'm seeing is a tiny little office.
An office chair.
Yeah, a little chair
checks
that probably
the box.
Checks the box to get in and may never be occupied.
Right,
and
I think that's
our current environment.
I think that already.
Need to see that in this and say, wow, what are we doing? Dead. And maybe we should, you know, I know it's probably going to be sacrilege to say, but, you know, the parking requirement and people having to put all those spaces underneath is counterintuitive to our master plan, commercial. It just doesn't make sense.
But if you control the density aspect of it too, then you can change the parking.
Yeah, but then you also have the issue of people maybe not buying again, because you do need, I mean, I understand that developers and people who want to run, you know, they do it for money. Mm-hmm. And if the cost of buying that land costs this much, well, I need to make this much.
It's finding the balance. It's finding the balance. Yeah. It's seeing how we could
then adjust the apartments of all the residents of the borough, too, that we have to live with this.
And we still have to be able to, it has to be viable to add parking regardless. Like, we can't terminate that requirement, even if it's underneath. I know it's not the best option, but we can't just keep offering up variances so that they can park in the public lot because we don't have space anymore. So the ordinance needs to balance that, the commercial space, plus being allowed.
But we will have a lot of space because nobody will be coming here because there'll be no great place to go. Like,
I think this is required. I think the ordinance is necessary.
Yeah.
I think that your comment is also important. I just want to make sure that we balance your comment with still allowing design aspects to be included for parking, because there isn't a lot of space for parking. There isn't a lot of space to plan or to build parking. And if we're limiting residential, which is fine, and then if we can identify the commercial, but we still have to be able to allow them to build and design, or design and build parking spots at that location.
Mm-hmm. And it's all relative, because as parking decreases, the units decrease, and then the property values decrease.
Yeah.
So it's going to be
right. But if we're not offering variances, we have to allow them the space to put parking on site.
Right.
Is my point.
But we're definitely limiting commercial at the same time, and that's about attracts. Yeah. I think that's my concern, is that our master plan wants it to still be a place that people engage in commerce and.
And it has to be flexible enough to allow all of these things, which is so tricky, right? It's like a silver bullet. You know, because I think that for ground floor retail to be successful, you need the developer expertise, you need an existing retail corridor, and you need a sustainable retail market. And I think that a lot of this stuff, like, should also come from the developer. So, like, my point being, like, right, we're setting these parameters that a developer, a skilled developer, will be able to come in and present something that balances parking, balances retail. Yeah. And not just have like a sea of cars when you're walking down First, or just dead office space.
So. Well, we're requiring retail space. Even if you increase the commercial space, they're required to do parking as well.
Yep.
And you can also create standards, and they can present their case for variance. Otherwise,
they already do.
Yeah.
No, well, that's, yeah. I think that's the concern.
But I do think some of the balance that we're talking about is really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a control in some more, too. So where there's developers coming in, they're not going to be asking for 20 or 30 variances.
Right.
Waivers.
Yeah.
Right. You'll make it, yeah. They still might. Not that you want to make it easier for a developer or an investor, but you also, you know, you make it attractive enough. You know, if they know what the standard is, and then they can decide, all right, you know, I need to invest this much in order to make it worth my while. If the standard is well defined, you don't get the big confusing applications. And I don't know if I'm the developer or I'm the architect, the planner, I'd rather have a better detailed list of things I need to accomplish, rather than, all right, you know, see if this works. it's going to be hard to come up with an ordinance with the language, the appropriate language, to accomplish it. But I think we got to start somewhere.
Yeah, but I think too, we're not going to be seeing a square peg forced into a round hole. You
right.
know, like, if something doesn't fit for a site, it shouldn't be proposed for a site. But, you know, propose something that is more appropriate. So, you know, just, that, I guess that's the hope, right?
Right, it's
yeah.
the hope.
Yeah.
You've seen it.
Yeah.
It keeps increasingly getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and every building that comes in is bigger than the last one. So
yeah.
something has to be done.
But I think this is a start, and we can build it here instead of having people come in. Here's my concept. Now you tell me how you want me to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Because that's just a waste of our time.
Exactly.
Yes.
And absolutely. To Mark's point, this is a start. This is the first attempt to revisit these regulations and right-size these regulations that haven't been touched in quite a while. So,
and, you know, and rather than like coming up with like the Brooklyn phone book worth of changes and new ordinances and this and that, you know, I think it's better to pick one, deal with that, go move to the next one, deal with that, move to the next one, deal with that. And this might be a good time for me to let you know that the next meeting I'm going to ask for a subcommittee to take a look at some of these.
Yes.
Yeah.
The proper thing is to let's get a subcommittee.
Yeah.
So what's your time frame on this?
So, our... Okay. The councilman's time frame on this is to get this to council in December, because in January they start all over again. So what I would like to do, as Mr. Doherty indicated earlier, it's been a generation really since the ordinances have been revisited, and there's been an awful lot of changes in the last 10, 11, 15, 20 years. Socially, economically, you know, you name it. So, I'm going to ask for the formation of a subcommittee, and with the idea that, you know, we'll take a look, like, what is it that we see the most as being problematic to, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a big project developer. It could be something residential. It could be something that has to do with whatever. But, you know, to Brian's point, it's high time that, and I'm not trying to push it on the council, but that's the council's job is the ordinance.
No, it is.
Right.
It absolutely is. And it's long past time.
But they were on the front line, and we can provide them with, whether it's guidance or, you know, just ideas that gives them something to work with. And the reason I would like to do that in November, maybe we get started, you know, December, January, so that we have something tangible May and June so that council then has the remainder of that fiscal year to think about it, debate about it, make changes, and then have something that can be accomplished within the year, rather than, yeah, we'll think about it, we'll send it over, and then it just gets lost in the stratosphere, and the next thing you know, it's November, December, and there's just not enough time. So if we get a head start, we give them something tangible to work with, identify, it doesn't have to be the entire book, it just has to be, you know, a couple of like the hot topics. So like, okay, you know, when's the last time we've had a meeting where somebody didn't say they were parked? Never. So parking, let's say, you know, we take
one. I guess that like four times just in this.
Yeah, like, you know, and there's a reason. It's important. So if there's something that we can help council with when it comes to these ordinances.
The last ordinance that was changed, I think, might have taken about a year. It was a lot simpler than this.
Yeah, like.
So it's like, you know, explain it to them. I guess it's possible to do that by December.
This?
Sure.
Okay. Absolutely. But beyond, I just want to, I'm sorry, Smith, I'll be quick, but I just want to reemphasize the point that I feel very strongly that there needs to be close collaboration on this Chapter 150 between this body and the governing body. And I'll come out and say that has not been the case in recent years, and that is something that I think needs to change in addition to the regulations. So that's hopefully ushering in this subcommittee and this dialogue between these two entities, and we'll just be a much more productive and effective bodies, both of us.
And that collaborative work can also include Shade Tree,
environmental,
you know,
the open space
historical association, you know,
all of
you know, it's important. I mean, you know, we're all volunteers here, and there's a reason for it. It's because we all care about the borough and each other, and this is, you know, what we do.
I think we're the best board, but, you know, just my opinion.
So part of the purpose of Mr. Sides' annual report each year is to identify trends and to see where changes might be needed to be made and such. So, you know, something to look at also through the last few years, maybe. And
for sure,
kind of get idea of this year what we've seen. But I know, Mr. Sivey, if it's possible to do a quick analysis, I know you usually do that in December, January.
That's in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. So I say you're probably ongoing.
So it's ongoing, but to the chairman's point, I'm aware of any number of communities where the planning board has a long-range planning committee, which is a continuing committee every year. You have three members appointed to it. They can also consult with representatives from Shade Tree, representatives from the health department, from wherever there's concern. And they're continuing committees that operate every year. They may not meet every month. They may meet every other month. They may meet quarterly. Whatever, and then when there's something that they feel needs to be passed along to the governing body, they come to the board, say this is what we're thinking about, we should send this up to the governing body and let them get a look at it, see what our concerns are.
It would be nice to, you know, take some of your hard work when it comes to that annual report and be proactive with it rather than say, yep, I remember that. So, and I also, you know, before we end this, I just want to say that, you know, when I am considering, you know, the subcommittee, I'm also concerned of your time already. So, you know, we have a month to, you know, maybe if you can lend a hand to it, you know, we have, I'm by far the dumbest person on this board. I don't even know how I got to be chair, but like, we're really blessed to have like very, very smart, very capable professionals in their own right here, who can really add value to something like this. So with that, so anything else?
We officially tabling this then for.
No.
Do anything with this, you know, official.
So we just did.
No, I think, yeah, I wrote down a lot of notes. I certainly, you know, Malika had an offer to take comments via emails. Please send them along.
And you'll do that.
Can I get your email? Or?
I'll absolutely. And then the intention is to introduce it at council, formally introduce. We'll come back here November 2nd for consistency review, and then we'll proceed from there.
So are we forming a subcommittee?
We're going to do that in November. Not this. This already has traction. So, but forward looking, other parts of the borough code that needs to be re-examined. You know what I mean? There's really been no tangible changes in a generation. So there's really the laundry list of things that we take a look at. So like the subcommittee will take a look and kind of prioritize, you know, this is the most important, this is kind of important, this is what we can wait on, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So
thank you.
So with that, I need a motion to adjourn the workshop.
Make a motion.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Now we will call to order the regular meeting. If we could have roll call, please.
Mr. Bob. Dr. Yes. Councilman Lafferty?
Here.
Mr. Hall?
Here.
Mr. Gasso?
Here.
Mr. Kinsey?
Here.
Mr. Majewski?
Here.
Vice Chair Neff?
Here.
Chair McCartney?
Here.
Dr. Zuzan?
Here.
Mr. Curtis?
Here.
Mr. Bird? Ms. Wallace?
Here.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to jump up here now to the...
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, for members of the public who are here, number 9 on the regular meeting agenda is a continuance of PB 2302 Kaylee, 161st Avenue. That was rescheduled this evening so that we could look at new dates. And at this point, the matter is going to be carried. We're looking at the November 2, 2023 regular meeting to continue that application. So if anyone in the public has an interest in that case, you should be here at 7 o'clock p.m. on November 2nd, 2023, in this same room, when that matter is going to be continued. And this is the only notice you're going to get. You're not going to get an email. You're not going to get a certified mailing. It's not going to be published in the newspaper. It will be on the website for the municipality.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Next item is the approval of the September 7th, 2023 minutes. Need a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve Jocelyn.
I'll second. Kropinski.
Mr. Hathaway.
Yes.
Councilman Dockery.
Yes.
Mr. Jocelyn.
Yes.
Mr. Kropinski.
Yes.
Ms. Majewski.
Yes.
Chair McCulter.
Yes.
Dr. Zula.
Abstain.
Yes.
No? Sorry. Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Ms. Walter?
Yes.
Mr. Cassis?
Thank you very much. Next item is the approval of September 2023 special meeting minutes.
Oh, that's a winner.
Motion?
Make a motion to accept.
Yes.
I'll second.
Mr. Cacamo?
Yes.
Councilman Dougherty?
Abstain.
Mr. Hawley?
Yes.
Mr. Jasko?
Yes.
Mr. Kropinski?
Yes.
Ms. Majewski?
Yes.
Vice Chair Neff?
Yes.
Chair McCulter?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Ms. Walter?
Yes.
Ms. Shimani?
Next item is approval of attorney's voucher for July 2023. Need a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Second. Kropinski.
Mr. Cacamo?
Yes.
Councilman Dockery?
Yes.
Mr. Hall?
Yes.
Mr. Jasko?
Yes.
Mr. Kinsey?
Yes.
Ms. Majewski?
Yes.
Vice Chair Neff?
Yes.
Chair McCulter?
Yes.
Dr. Zuzula?
Yes.
Next item is resolution PB23-04, Sandy Hook Scooter, 25 West Highlands.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the applicant had requested that the matter be withdrawn without prejudice, and the board voted at the last meeting to allow that withdrawal, and this is a resolution memorializing that decision.
Need a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept.
I'll second, Majewski.
Mr. Papelbon?
Yes.
Councilman Lafferty?
Yes.
Mr. Dastro?
Yes.
Mr. Kuzinski?
Yes.
Mr. Majewski?
Yes.
Chair Kolchak?
Yes.
Dr. Sizlak?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Next item, resolution PB 22-26, Torres, 148 Bayside Drive.
Mr. Chairman, this is a memorialization as well of a resolution granting variance approval for this application.
Need a motion?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Okay, Mr. Papelbon?
Yes.
Councilman Lafferty?
Yes.
Mr. Dastro?
Yes.
Mr. Kuzinski?
Yes.
Mr. Majewski?
Yes.
Chair Kolchak?
Yes.
Dr. Sizlak?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Ms. Walter?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Next item, resolution PB 23-03, Dwayne Dewis, 6 Bonnie Bray Path.
Mr. Chairman, this is also memorialization granting variance approval. The board acted last month. This is memorializing that action.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second, Dastro.
Mr. Papelbon?
Yes.
Councilman Lafferty?
Abstain.
Mr. Dastro?
Yes.
Mr. Kuzinski?
Yes.
Mr. Majewski?
Yes.
Chair Kolchak?
Yes.
Dr. Sizlak?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Nancy. Next up is new application, PB 23-05, Soul. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Yes. 64 Prospect Circle.
Mr. Chairman, I've reviewed service in connection with this application. Service is in order. The board does have jurisdiction to hear the application. And I'm aware of the following exhibits that the board has received in connection with the application. They include exhibit one. It's a variance application of Matt and Sarah Hall. It's undated. Exhibit A2 is a survey prepared by Majarian Associates. That's dated June 8, 2022. Exhibit A3 is a proposed addition plan prepared by Insight Engineering with a steep slope analysis. That's dated June 21, 2023. Exhibit A4 are architectural elevation and floor plans prepared by Carnegie Architects. That's dated June 28, 2023. And Exhibit A5 is review number one from your engineers and the associates. That's dated September 13, 2023. Those are the exhibits that I'm aware of in connection with this application. And so here you are.
I'm Brian Canadian. Thanks for hearing me.
Is the applicant here?
Yes, that's Matthew.
Could you just come forward? I need to get something from you on the record, please. Matthew, just one of you. Start. Just identify yourself, please.
Your name and yourself.
And you're the applicant in this case, are you not?
Yes, sir.
And you've asked these gentlemen to present the application.
Yes, sir.
So have the authorities to do that. Okay. Good, thank you.
Can you just spell your last name first for Nancy?
It's up. P-A-R-M-A-G-I-A-N.
Is that Nancy?
Sir, would you raise your right hand and be sworn before we begin? Do you either swear or affirm that in the testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right, you've already stated your name and address. Why don't you tell the board about yourself, give us your credentials.
Brian Carnegie, I'm a licensed architect in the state of New Jersey, principal owner of Carnegie Architects. Our office is located in downtown Red Bank, 32 Monmouth Street. I've been in front of this board once before, back in 2021. I think that was, if I recall correctly, that might have been the first meeting back post-COVID, I think.
A lot of times.
But thank you for hearing our case.
Okay, so tell the board about the application and what you're trying to accomplish.
Sure, if I may, I just have one additional supplemental exhibit.
Okay.
If I could pass these around.
Why don't you describe what it is and give it...
So it's 5 additional pages to supplement the architectural plans that were submitted as part of our initial application. First page is just a photo of the original house for context. The second page is just an existing plan of the ground floor basement and garage. The third page is a first floor existing and demolition plan, again, for further context to help shed some light on our proposal. And then the fourth page is just a brief series of diagrams that I think just kind of very clearly and succinctly illustrates what we're looking to do and what we're looking to remove and add. So.
Okay, can you pass those up to the board, please? And can you make, do you have enough to make something available to anyone in the public who might have an interest that we can put one between?
There should be, actually, there's a couple. There should be a few additional copies here.
One at the first pew by Ms. Smith here. Anyone in the public wants to come and take a look at these additional exhibits, you're welcome to come forward and get a look. This exhibit is going to be exhibit A6, A3, 5 pages, including a photo, 4 plans and diagrams.
Thank you. Okay. So I think what I'll start with and what I'm going to present to you is it's more or less a sort of general overview of the project and architecture, our overall goals and intent for the project, and a bit of an overview of the existing building, what we're looking to do, and the nature of the addition and the work that we're doing. At that point, I will turn it over to Mr. Cleveland from Insight, and he'll speak on the civil scope, the steep slope analysis, and any of the work pertaining to zoning and civil. So, brief intro. The project is located at 64 Prospect Circle, Block 74, Lot 7, in the R2 single-family district. The original house, which you can see in the exhibit that was just passed around, and also in this photo here, was built in 1973. It was recently purchased by the Soul family, Matthew and Sarah, in 2021. It's their primary residence, and they currently occupy the home with their 2 young sons. Characteristically, it's essentially a raised ranch with an attached garage and a walkout basement consisting of about 1,600 square feet of gross floor area. When they purchased the home, it was purchased as a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath home. However, they currently occupy and use it more as a 2-bedroom, 1-bath home, with the boys sharing a bedroom and the family sharing a single full bath. I say they occupy it as a 2-bedroom home because the 3rd bedroom, which is located on the street side of the house, and which can be seen on page 3 of the exhibit that was just passed out, is attached to an existing greenhouse and is separated only by a single pane sliding glass door. So aside from being a relatively small and awkward space, being located right near the entry and the hallways, it's also quite exposed to the elements. It gets cold in the winter, it gets hot in the summer, so they really don't use it that way. They've been focusing it as an office. The half bath is located on the basement level, adjacent to the garage, and that consists of a single toilet located beneath the stair. There's no three wall, there's no wash basin, and the head clearance below that stair is well below code minimum. But for all intents and purposes, it's not really a usable bathroom for them, and they don't use it. The state of the existing home is in need of rehabilitation to varying degrees. You can see at some of these current photos, there's a greenhouse, which is located on the flat roof area above the garage that was originally built as a sort of exterior deck. That has been leaking more or less since they purchased the home, as far as they know. And this leak has also compromised the roof of the garage as well. So there's been an active on that roof since they purchased the home. It's a kind of an old school built up asphalt roof, and they've just been managing it. The extent of the rotten structural damage within that roof cavity is not clear at this time because we haven't really opened up the hood to investigate. But they have been holding on spending money to repair this portion of the house because it would make the most sense for them financially to incorporate this repair into the larger scope of the work that we're proposing should the board be amenable to our proposal. The facade is a stucco facade that's I'd advise just needs to be replaced in full. There's a number of cracks and areas in need of repair. I suspect there's relatively significant water damage at a few different locations. Again, the extent is unclear at this time, but I would suspect rotten sheathing and some additional work that will have to take place. The brick at the base of the building, that's just on the front face, is existing, original to the house. Doors and windows, again, a lot of them are original to the home. Just very inefficient, low insulation values in the winter months and high thermal gain in the summer months. So it's just all of those will need replacement. The roof is in need of replacement, and there's an existing retaining wall at the driveway that is more or less bulging into the driveway, so it's kind of leaning at 30 degrees into the driveway. So that will also need to be essentially reset. It's just kind of migrated over time against the weight of the soil that's retained. So we do propose to correct this retaining wall, which we'll elaborate on momentarily as part of our work. You can see in the site plans prepared by Insight that right now it's on a bit of an angle away from the house. Part of our proposal is also to widen the driveway, and part of widening the driveway is just straightening out that retaining wall so it's on a clean 90 degree from the house. But we don't propose to push it any further to the north than the furthest point of the retaining wall present. But we are proposing to widen the driveway to the south slightly, which we'll elaborate on further. And then lastly, in terms of the current state of the house, the front entry is awkward to say the least. It's non-compliant by current residential code standards. There's a front entry door that is an outswing door swinging out over three steps as you come into the house. So for somebody who's perhaps a little more young and nimble, like the Souls, it's not too much of a problem right now. But it's, you know, categorically relatively unsafe. So the impetus for the work being requested is two-part. One is to address a lot of the bearing issues that I've just described with the house. It's generally it's full remediation. And secondly is to increase the space of the house. We're proposing a 400 square foot addition, approximately. Part of this addition, the main component of this addition is a new primary suite for Matthew and Sarah. So that the two boys can then take their own bedrooms and they no longer have to share a single bath as a family. We're also proposing a small office, which is partly comprised in the new addition space and then partly comprised in the existing house, relatively at the same location as that existing third bedroom adjacent to the greenhouse. We are proposing to reconfigure the front entry to allow for a level compliant landing entering into the house, and then a relatively minor interior reconfiguration of the basement plumbing to allow for a usable half bath down in that basement area, and just a more gracious layout for the laundry room. The location of the addition, we are proposing to build it essentially over top of the existing garage where that greenhouse is located. Page 5 of the supplemental exhibit diagrams that I referenced pretty clearly. We are then, part of the proposal is to essentially fill in that space and then extend the addition 5 feet to the south
Mr. Cormier, let me just interrupt you.
Yes.
I don't think we have page five.
Yep. Oh, is it on five?
Page four.
I'm sorry, for the record, let me correct that. It's page four. Okay. Thank you. Part of that addition is and then extending beyond the foundation wall below 5 feet into that southern side yard. That existing side yard setback there is 29.5 feet, and by extending 5 feet off the existing foundation wall, we're now proposing a 28.8 foot side yard there. The combined total of both side yards, though we have an existing non-conforming side yard on the north side, it is compliant to the 30-foot side yard combined total requirement. We've maintained the line of the existing front facade for this addition. The reason being is twofold. It's logical just from a structural standpoint to repurpose the existing foundation walls. And it also just simplifies construction in terms of minimizing jogs in the roof and the facade. So we're just keeping a straight facade there and pushing 5 feet to the south. What that does, because of the curvature of the lot, is it reduces the front yard setback further, which is a current non-conforming front yard setback. The existing was 22 feet. We are now proposing 20.95 feet. But again, maintaining the existing facade, front face of the building. Further to that, just being cognizant of the fact that we are in a steep slope zone, we're looking to minimize disturbance as much as possible. So our proposal cantilevers that 5 foot addition out off of the existing foundation walls. So we're not actually putting any new footings in or disturbing the soil there beyond a minimal excavation just to kind of level out the ground there adjacent to the house, because it will now function more or less as a covered walkway underneath the cantilevered addition as you circulate back towards the back of the house. And so that's the kind of total scope of the scheme. In addition to the general repair and remediation, new doors and windows, new roof, new siding, and then a kind of wholesale investigation into any sort of rock and repair work that might need to happen. Thank you.
Ben, you. Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Ben Matlack from CM Associates. Hi, everybody. I'm joining in for Doug this evening. I've got a question about the cantilevered addition. So you're relying on the existing foundation to support that. Have you done like a structural review or a geotechnical review, a report to look at that to see if there's any impact? Are we going to, are you going to look at it and realize you have to dig up the foundation and do something sturdier?
Thank you. We haven't done the soils analysis on the property. We're operating on the assumption that the existing footings are adequate. We have done an initial analysis of the existing 8-inch CMU block wall. It's not compromised in any way, and it's capable of bearing the load of the bedroom up above. It's a relatively light load, being just a single story bedroom and the roof above. But we have not done a soils analysis. That is something that we'd be happy to provide if the board would like us to. Anything else?
Is it a three-bedroom house?
Yes.
That's the proposed?
Yeah.
So it's a three-bedroom house now, right? And you're adding another.
So it was sold as a three-bedroom house. It's technically a three-bedroom house. They use it now as a two-bedroom house, and they're essentially converting it to a three-bedroom house. They're maintaining.
Right. But that one room could still qualify as a bedroom.
So that room is actually going to be occupied by half new master suite and half at all bedroom.
Okay.
Reconfiguring the interior layout.
Thanks.
Yeah.
But it's still a three bedroom. It's a three bedroom now. It's still going to be a three bedroom.
Got it.
I don't have any more questions for the architect. probably when the engineer comes up, I'll try that one.
Very well. Questions from the board?
I have a question just for my education, make sure I properly understand the increased square footage is solely on the second floor, extending out to where the greenhouse is. There's no additional, other than the driveway where you're going to widen it, there's no increased square footage. It will be in the existing footprint.
No.
Other than upstairs.
Other than that addition, that does extend 5 feet beyond the existing line of the house. There's a total of like 130 square feet of new coverage, that's building coverage that's related directly to the proposed addition.
Thank you.
Will there be any changes to the runoff?
No. No, we're going to maintain the existing gutters and downspouts, section extending 5 feet.
Any other questions from the board? Any questions from the public? Just, do we have any on that?
No questions.
Seeing none? Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Raise your right hand and be sworn. Do you either swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding be the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth?
I do.
And state your name and address.
Douglas Quellen. The office location is 1955 Route 34, Suite 1A in Wall Township.
Can you spell the last name for the benefit of our board secretary?
Sure. It is C-L-E-L-L-A-N-D.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Why don't you give the board the benefit of your credentials and then go into you.
Sure. Like I said, my name is Douglas Brown. I'm a licensed professional engineer in the state of New Jersey. I have worked for Insight Engineering for the last 10 years, currently a senior project manager there. I have not had the pleasure of presenting before this board before, but I have about somewhere between 25 or 30 others in the local area. Monmouth Ocean County, working on projects at Insight, ranging from single family homes to larger commercial developments, you know, focusing on land use, stormwater management, grading and drainage. I have a bachelor's degree from the University of Rhode Island in engineering, and my license is in good standing.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? Good, we'll accept you.
Thank you very much. So thank you everyone for taking the time to be here. I'll just give a run through from an engineering perspective. I have a site rendering behind me. It's essentially a colorized version of the plot plan that was submitted to you. Just looks a little nicer. So it is 64 Prospect Circle, block 74, lot 7, containing 10,072 square feet. Or 0.23 acres. It's located on the west side, so the interior side of, so the tax map calls it Prospect Avenue, but I think everyone calls it Prospect Circle, and so does Google. So we'll refer to it as Prospect Circle, and it's located in the R2 single family residential zone. The applicant is seeking approval to construct, as Brian mentioned, a one-story addition to the south side, and that's shown here in the darker color to the south side of the existing dwelling, and the applicant is also proposing a new entry stair slash covered porch and a new driveway. Those are shown here and here. And the applicant is requesting bulk variance relief related to constructing principal and accessory structures on undersized lot. So as I mentioned, I'll go through some of the boring stuff first. Just going through.
Colin, before you go there. Is the exhibit put on the board here, is that part of the other materials that you submitted, or is this a different?
It is not. I'm sorry, I should hand out some of the exhibits as well. Got a little ahead of myself. So this, I'll hand out, what I'm showing here is known as the site rendering. It's just a colorized version of the plot plan. And then if I could also hand out at this time the neighborhood aerial, just a zoomed out version of the same thing, really, just to give some context to the neighborhood. So the first item that you've given us, you've given Marky of A7, and that is a smaller version of what you listed on the board here. That's correct. So it's a colorized site rendering prepared by Inside Engineers. I'm not seeing the date on it. No date, but the dark thing is, it's
September 9th. Dated September 9th.
23rd.
It's the second line, or third line down.
September 9th, 2023. September 9th, 2023.
Look, if I can breathe.
We have an eyesight subcommittee.
I think we're on it.
Very good. I appreciate that. And then the second is the neighborhood aerial, which I'm seeing has the same date.
Do we have enough to let the public want extra?
Yeah,
I can
turn that out.
Yeah. Can
we
turn that?
No, we do have an extra pen.
Yeah. You're right, it's behind us. More copies for next time.
We're also good digital.
Yes. All right, so I'll first run through some of the existing nonconformities. It is a uniquely shaped lot. The minimum lot area is 15,000 square feet for the zone, and we are at 10,072. The minimum lot width of 96.86 square 100 feet is required. Minimum lot shape diameter of 52.25, where 65 feet is required, and a existing minimum front yard setback of 21.6 feet, whereas 25 feet is required, and that is a slight correction to the originally submitted plot plan. As part of my hearing prep, we noticed that the survey that we were given dimensions to the right side of the house over here at 22 feet, and actually the existing setback to the garage on the left-hand side is 21.6, so it's about 4/10 closer to the street. Just wanted to put that on the record. And then the minimum side yard setback of one side, and that would be looking at the house right-hand side, 4.2 feet, whereas 15 feet is required. And the minimum accessory structure side yard setback of an encroachment of 0.3 feet, whereas 5 feet is required. And that is for the patio on the right-hand side, which is at grade. And also a minimum accessory structure rear yard setback of 36 feet encroaching, whereas 5 feet is required. And that is located towards the rear existing shed behind the property line. And a minimum gross floor area, total floors of 1,609 square feet, whereas 1,800 square feet is required. And this is proposed to be eliminated as part of the proposed addition. And moving on to some of the proposed variances, minimum front yard setback of 20.95. And that is, as I mentioned, the dimension here to the front left corner of the house, so the proposed addition, where 25 feet is required and 21.6 feet exists, and a maximum building coverage of 16.9%, whereas 15% is required, and 14.09 feet percentage, a 14.09% exists. Also, the maximum lot coverage permitted on the property pursuant to your steep slope area requirements is 2,776 square feet, whereas a lot coverage of 3,031 square feet is proposed. Now, in terms of utilities, we are proposing, as Brian mentioned, there may be some internal reworking of the utilities, but they are proposed to remain and be reutilized. In terms of stormwater management, as Brian mentioned, the downspouts are going to be staying in the same location. The site is well drained and is tributary to Prospect Circle right away. We're not proposing to change that. Existing drainage patterns will be maintained, and neighboring property will be protected, and flows will not be increased to any of the adjoining properties of record. In terms of parking, we are proposing to widen the existing driveway, which will provide more off-street parking for the Sauls. And in this regard, if the garage ends up being utilized for storage, two cars will still be able to fit within the proposed driveway. This also, in my opinion, provides some benefit to the neighborhood, because I did notice there's a no parking sign along the inside curb line of Prospect Circle here. Most likely because of site distance issues, people pulling out of driveways and not being able to see too good. So, in my opinion, getting cars off the street is a positive. And then finally, to speak to the steep slopes, let me just pull up our submitted plan here, which I can identify some of the steep slope areas. So there aren't a whole lot of steep slope areas. Some in the front, the ones in the front, I believe they don't look like natural steep slopes. They look like at some point when the house was originally constructed, that this area in the front may have been built up to help hide that lower floor. And there are some steeper slopes on the left-hand side of the building where the proposed addition will be, as Brian mentioned, cantilevered above, and then continuing back along the rear and left-hand side of the property. So the cantilevered section of the proposed addition is approximately 128 square feet. So part of that lot coverage, so we are requiring a variance for steep slope lot coverage, and 128 square feet of that is associated with the overhang of the proposed addition, which does not actually touch the ground. And this would effectively reduce our steep slope lot coverage to about 2,904 square feet, where 2,776 square feet permitted. Also, the enlarged driveway is the other contributor to the lot coverage, which I previously discussed, in my opinion, being a benefit to the neighborhood. It's important to keep in mind that, like I mentioned, that's not in the front yard. It's not your typical natural undisturbed steep slope you might find throughout the borough. But rather an area of the front yard that was artificially built up at the time the house was originally constructed. It is lawn, and the coverage variance is also a function really of the undersized lot area. So the largest portion of the lot, being 7,680 square feet, is less than 15% slopes. So if the lot were a compliant size, the steep slope lot coverage would easily comply. And finally, strictly speaking from a zoning perspective, we are only at 30.1%, whereas 40% is permitted. And again, this is on an undersized lot. So.
Do you know the existing driveway square footage? Compared to the proposed by any chance?
Yes. So the existing driveway square footage is about 260 square feet, and proposed is about 430.
And what was the new proposed driveway material? I don't have that listed.
We don't have it, we haven't specifically decided either asphalt pavement or concrete pavers.
Okay.
We have a detail for each provided on a plan.
That'll be impervious.
Still be impervious, correct.
Can we ask questions now?
Why don't we?
The only thing I have left is to go through some of the comments from CME's review letter, which I can do or I can wait.
No, I think it's appropriate.
No, that's okay.
Sure. All right, so going, skipping down to number seven, which really says the applicant should be prepared to discuss the following issues with the board. Yeah, for 7A, I will leave most of that to our planner. But I will just say, in terms of the building coverage variance, you know, if we were a compliant lot size, we would be at approximately 11.35% building coverage, which would comply for a compliant lot size. 7B, number of bedrooms, I believe that was addressed already. It is three bedrooms proposed and existing. 7C speaks really to stormwater management. Based on my prior testimony, I believe there will be no detrimental stormwater impacts. There will be a de minimis increase in flows while maintaining existing drainage patterns. Proper construction methods will be utilized to ensure the slopes are stable during and after construction. And there are two trees proposed to be removed as part of the driveway reconstruction in the front. We believe those trees were added after the house was constructed. Looking back at some of the photos of the original house construction, they were not there. But certainly the areas will be properly stabilized upon removal. And that leads into 7B. The applicant would absolutely agree to complete the tree removal permit process if approved. And 7E, the location, slope, and constructability of the proposed driveway. So the driveway really is proposed at a minimal slope. It's just enough for proper drainage and will require retaining walls on the right-hand side as part of the reconstruction of the front entry stairs. And as Brian mentioned, Joe 1 is in pretty rough shape. So we're proposing to reconstruct that and reconstruct the entry stairs. 7F.
Doug, I'm sorry, before you go on, can you talk about the driveway a little more? On the left side, you have an existing brick retaining wall to be removed, and then it's being expanded. How is that grading going to work? Is that are you doing another retaining wall on that side, or is that just going to be grading to transition into the existing?
Yeah, the existing wall on the left hand side isn't retaining a whole lot. It's really more of an aesthetic thing, I think. So there's very minimal grading required. I think we'll match up pretty well with the existing grades on the left hand side.
Sure. And how? Where is the driveway drained? Is it just sheet the water towards the street?
Yes. So it drains to the. If you're looking at the plan, the front left corner, where the bottom of the curb shot is 119.90. So yes, everything will be sheet flowed to Prospect Circle.
But what's that slope doing?
So we maintain on the right hand side, we kind of held grade there, and everything's kind of pitched diagonally towards the front left corner. The grade at the dwelling is 120.9, and comes down to there's about a foot of grade change over. I don't have my scale with me, about 30 feet or so, but
actually about 36 feet.
Yeah.
So you're about 3% slope there.
Correct.
Roughly. Yep. And the driveway, that is sized enough to accommodate two cars?
That's correct, yeah. There's, it's about 19 and a half feet wide and right around 21 between the house and the front property line, so you can, typical parking space, 9 by 18, so we can fit two comfortably.
Thank you.
No problem. I think I was on 7F. We would agree to provide any required retaining wall design. There might be a small portion close to the house where it's around 4 feet tall, but as it comes out towards the street, it tapers down to nothing, and the large majority of it will be less than 3 feet, but there is a part, you know, closer to the house where it's about 4 feet tall, so we can provide any required retaining wall design to the board engineer. 7G, you know, the only variance we need is for lot coverage. We do comply with disturbance as well as maximum impervious surface. So I want to focus a little bit on some of the positives as well. And like I said, I think largely, 7,000 plus square feet, less than 15% slope. You know, so if this was a compliant lot size, I think we would easily comply with the lot coverage requirements for the steep slope ordinance. 7H, we have some photos of the existing conditions of the property. 7I, so these improvements, I know that we discussed them, we know they've existed when the owners purchased the home in 2021. We're not proposing any changes to those existing structures, and certainly we are not seeking the board's approval to legalize any of those structures on Lot 12. 7J, the applicant agrees to comply, and a note can be added to the plan confirming the same. 7K, same response, the applicant agrees to comply, and a note will be added to the plan confirming the same. And 7L as well, the applicant agrees to comply, and we can add a note to the plan for that one as well. That is the end of my testimony. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Dr. Suzlock here.
I do. I just have a few questions. So if you're removing a retaining wall and widening the driveway, that's going to change the drainage, albeit slightly. Has that runoff, that additional runoff, been quantified because you're adding additional impervious
area there? So. We did consider it, and I mean, you're right, there is going to be an increase. We feel it'll be de minimis. We're talking, you know, tenths of a, you know, cubic foot per second. And the drainage patterns will be maintained. The driveway is far enough away from either side property line that we won't drain onto any of the neighbors. And it'll be directed to Prospect Avenue, which is ultimately, as an engineer, where I always like to get the stormwater to go. So it can, you know, flow through the gutter line on Prospect Circle.
Well, that's the question, because I think the architect stated before that they were redoing the retaining wall, the stairs, the retaining walls, because they were moving, mm-hmm. Which would give some indication of hydrostatic pressure, which would maybe identify an issue with the drainage pattern, with the existing drainage pattern. So I'm just curious if that was evaluated, you know, just based on the structural damage, and it's indicative of what I would first see as hydrostatic pressure from the drainage component. But I'm sure you looked at it, so I was just curious.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the proposed design, we'll have plenty of drainage, plenty of pitch away from the retaining wall and out towards the street, but we don't anticipate any buildup behind the wall.
Will there be, like, weep holes? I see a 4-inch drain line at the bottom. Will there be, like, additional weep holes that might site additional?
Yeah, in the event, you know, if we get a overwhelming amount of rain in certain times, there will be proper drainage behind the wall so that nothing gets trapped back there. And that can all be detailed on our plan.
And then that additional runoff will be included in the plan as well? The potential for that additional runoff?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
And that will be part of your calculations that will be provided for the retaining wall, correct?
Yes.
Any other questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman, I do have just a quick clarification, two parts of our report. The minimum lot shape diameter, considered your lot, in our bulk table, we indicated that it was 109.95, that was an error. The existing is actually 52.25 diameter, which is an existing non-conformity. That's not changing, the shape of the lot is not changing. That's just an existing condition that is non-conforming. And then the principal building setback, you indicate that it's 20.95, which is quite shown on the plan. And the stairs are encroaching closer to the front setback. I don't know if that actually requires the same variance as the principal building, but I just wanted to make sure that the board is aware of that. It looks like that is roughly 9.5 feet to the front setback line.
Gotcha.
Or to the front property line.
Thank you, Mr. Medley. Ben, do you have anything else we need?
No, I think
Doug
did a good job going through our report and addressing each
item individually. Board, any other questions before we move to the public? Any questions from the public?
I just have a comment.
So there will be a comment section.
Perfect.
Yep. Anybody on? Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good evening. How are you doing? Do you either swear or affirm that any testimony given connection with this proceeding will be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
And then address, please.
My name is Barbara Allen. My last name is spelled B-H-L-E-N. Office address is 315 Route 34, Suite 129 in Colesmith, New Jersey.
I want to give the board the benefit of your credentials and then your testimony.
Good evening. As I stated, my name is Barbara Allen. I'm a licensed professional planner in the state of New Jersey and an ASCP. I'm a principal with Beacon Planning, and I've worked with Beacon Planning since the last 15 years. I've been accepted as a planner throughout the state of New Jersey, including communities such as Middletown, Red Bank, Ocean Township, Allen Harris. I can get you. You can stop it.
We have to test.
Good evening. As has been testified, we are requesting a small, it's not to the home, to make it more functional. The home is located within the R district. And it's permitted use within the zone. The property is in a regular shaped parcel, kind of pie shaped, and undersized for the district. As was discussed, an addition is proposed of the existing, lower level garage, and will cantilever approximately 5 feet over. Before I go into each of the variances, I do like to look at the master plan, and I do note that the community seeks to reinvest into its neighborhoods and strengthen them. So I'm going to go through each of the variances. All the variances requested kind of come under the C1, which is a hardship. And a lot of that is driven by the existing location of the home, as well as the undersized nature of the property. I would also opine that a number of them would qualify under the C2, which is the balance test. My exhibit board this evening consists of three photos that I have taken, two of the subject property and one of the neighboring parcel, and an older photo supplied by the applicant, showing what the front of the home looked like before all the landscaping. The top left photo is the front elevation of the home, so you can see it's kind of elevated branch. And the photo on the top right is actually the southern side of the home, and you can see where the greenhouse is. And this is where the addition will come forward and cantilever over by approximately 5 feet. The photo to the bottom right is a photo of actually the home directly located to the east. And it's just showing that there's a difference in like frontages and home sizes and characteristics. I mean, the neighborhood is characterized by two-story homes, though in this instance, we're just proposing to expand the existing first story. With respect to the C1 criteria, I would opine that the application, this would apply for the minimum lot area, minimum lot frontage, minimum lot shape diameter, the existing front yard setback, the existing side yard setback of 4.2 feet, the existing accessory structure setbacks. These are existing conditions that are not supposed to be exacerbated by the proposed addition. Particularly with the side yard, the addition is actually proposed on the other side of the home, so this side yard setback will not be touched. With respect to the front yard setback, as was testified to, the setback is to the home's southeast corner, and due to the curvature of the road, it's more that the lot kind of comes into the home, creating this kind of variance. The addition itself will respect the front line of the home, so it won't come forward. With respect to the building coverage, as was testified to, it is increased by the proposed cantilever over, which will not actually require foundations in this instance, and the increased dimensions of the driveway in order to permit two cars to park side by side. The building, so although it is an increase over what is permitted, it doesn't propose the same impacts that you would traditionally see. And this is also being driven a lot by the lot size. If this was a standard size lot, we would not be requesting this variance. With respect to the maximum lot coverage for steep slopes, again, it is an undersized lot, and none of the existing grades to the rear of the property, or even mostly to the side of the properties, are being disrupted. It's only in the front, which it does appear to be man-made itself, that disturbance is proposed. So it isn't honoring the intent of the ordinance, as that it's not disturbing the natural slopes. They're just seeking to put improvements where they logically make sense and will not inhibit or detract from the neighborhood. The remaining variances, as we discussed, are actually existing conditions proposed to remain. I also look to the municipal land use law for special reasons, and I would opine that G to provide sufficient space in appropriate locations. This is a residential home in a residential neighborhood, and the proposed addition will increase the square footage, but actually make it compliant with local zoning standards, as the home's livable square footage is currently undersized. And to encourage the coordination of the various public and private procedures and activities taking land development with the lessening the cost of such development and just more efficient use of land. So we're reutilizing an existing structure, we're just we're requesting a small addition to same in order to reinvest in it and make it more livable for a modern family and improve its functionality. With respect to substantial detriment, I don't see any. It's nothing, increased noise, traffic, or trash. The stormwater, as is testified to, will be de minimis in its increased impact. And the use as it's proposed, as it exists and is proposed, is permitted within the district. Therefore, I believe the application has met the statutory criteria. Are there any questions that I can answer?
Ben, you want to lead off?
I don't really have any kind of questions. I think that...
Board, any questions? Any questions from the public? Any questions on Zoom? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm assuming that you are the final witness.
I am the final witness.
So at this time, we will have comments from the public.
Great.
So we're going to ask you to come forward.
Sure. Jeff Swanton, 58 Prospect Circle. I live right next door to Matt's.
And I have to swear you in, so your statements will be valid. Do you either swear or affirm that any testimony given in connection with this proceeding be the truth, all truth, nothing but the truth?
I do.
Go ahead.
So living right next door to them, fantastic people. I think I'd like to focus on the positives looking at this project. I think there's negative impact to the drainage runoff. We're looking at them too. Anyone should be commended. They're trying to beautify their home. This is, I think we're looking at this probably dated 40, 50 years at least. So they're going to beautify the neighborhood, dealing with parking. We know it's a parking issue in town. Prospect Circle certainly not immune to that problem. We can only park, as it was stated, we can park on one side of the street, so widening that driveway, I think, really helps everyone in the neighborhood as well. And then also consider what it can do for the family. You know, make another bedroom, let them live comfortably in town. So consider those comments, and I'm all for it. I really think it would be a fantastic addition to the neighborhood.
Thank you, Jeff. Any other public comments?
No.
Any comments on that? All right, board discussion.
I like that they're under the lot impervious coverage. I always get a little thrown when building coverage doesn't comply, but lot impervious coverage totally complies. So, but this is a, I think it's the most essential shaped lot that I've seen yet. I like it. But I would feel comfortable if the application or whatever, like the drawings were submitted to include the retaining wall, the details of it with the weep hole, and make sure they comply with what Marissa had asked with the hydrostatic pressure, and not add to any additional runoff, like in that sense. But otherwise, I don't have an issue with it.
Yeah, I feel comfortable as long as they appear to be involved in the drainage component to it. So as long as that's adhered to, I have no issue.
It's obviously not a decorative piece.
No, there's
a purpose for that wall.
There was,
and it needs to be functional.
Yeah, and it's recognized that it does slightly change, but it will be handled. It will be quantified and submitted to our very talented engineers, and I think it'll be fine.
Bye. I think it's a good application. I think it's good for the neighborhood. Minimal requirements for variance, you know, due to existing conditions. And I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming that the motion and second, correct me if I'm wrong, would be subject to the conditions that we discussed, including the applicant's going to provide soils analysis, the applicant's going to obtain a tree removal permit, they're going to provide retaining wall design calculations, including the weep holes that were discussed. They're going to comply with ordinance section 163, with ordinance section 150-89, and ordinance section 150-52.
Correct.
I'll make a motion to accept that those
conditions. I still second.
Mr. Papamoff.
Yes.
Councilman Dougherty.
Yes.
Mr. Hawley.
Yes.
Mr. Dasko.
Yes.
Mr. Kuczynski.
Yes.
Mr. Juicy.
Yes.
Vice Chair Nash.
Yes.
Chairman Holter.
Yes.
Dr. Zuzal.
Yes.
Mr. Curtis.
Yes.
Ms. Walton.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Our next application, PB23-01 Kennedy Wright. We're going to let these folks kind of get their act together. We're going to take five to take five. And you are going to take five. Meet back here. Yes.
Hi, I'm Kennedy Wright.
So we are at new application, PB23-01 Kennedy Wright.
Mr. Chairman, I've reviewed services in order the board has jurisdiction to hear this case, and I'm aware of the following exhibits that the board has received thus far in connection with the application. They include Exhibit 1, the application for variance of Carrie Kennedy and Paul Wright, dated January 9, 2023. Exhibit A2 is an addendum to the application. Exhibit A3 is a location and topographic survey prepared by Land Control Services LLC. That's dated March 17, 2021. Exhibit A4 is a development plan checklist. That's dated January 9, 2023. Exhibit A5 is a zoning resolution from the zoning officer, Michelle Clark. That's dated March 15, 2021. Exhibit A6 is a plot plan steep slope analysis prepared by Insight Engineering. That's dated December 9, 2022. Exhibit A7 is a site plan with architectural elevation and floor plans prepared by Anthony Bush Jr. Architect. They're dated May 8, 2021, submitted May 12, 2022. Exhibit A8 is review number one from your engineer, Sammy Associates. That's dated March 6, 2023. Exhibit A9 is correspondence from Insight Engineering. That's dated July 5, 2023. Exhibit A10 is a plot plan and construction plan prepared by Insight Engineering. That's dated December 9, 2022, revised June 30, 2023. Exhibit A11 is review number two from your engineer, Sandy Associates, as stated September 12, 2023. And Exhibit A12 is a series of five site photos with front, side, and rear views of the existing conditions. That's Exhibit A12. Those are the exhibits that I'm aware of that the board has received thus far in connection with the application. And this is a D variance involved with floor area ratio, so that the class one and three members have stepped down from the board. And Mr. Akins is here on behalf of the
Thank you, Mr. Dyer. Good evening, Chairman, board members. Mark Akins on behalf of the applicants, Gary Kennedy and Paul Wright. Ladies and gentlemen, by way of brief history, this is a 1960s era single family residence. It has somewhat of a dated floor plan and exterior, as you'll hear from our architect, Anthony Bush, who's seated to my right, to your left, if you look at us. We propose to add a second floor above that existing single story. The residence currently has three bedrooms. It's proposed to have three bedrooms. One of the rooms on the downstairs will have a closet removed so that it will not have benches and become a fourth bedroom. That's the intention. There'll be a slight bump out of the front entry that increases the building coverage approximately 1.5%, but otherwise we're essentially going straight up to the second floor in connection with the proposal. The lot itself is severely undersized, where 30,000 square feet is required for your ordinance, and we're at just under 12,000. So that, of course, sets up some of the variances that are necessary and sought by the applicant relative to the lot coverage, the building coverage, as well as the, as Mr. Dive noted, the FAR variance, which we all know requires 5 out of 7 votes affirmatively. Also, there's a proposed pool. The pool is a modest one at 10 feet by 30 feet in its size. The location is limited by the existing septic that is at the back of this property. So again, with me this evening is Anthony Bush. Also, you'll hear testimony from, I believe, experts who have been previously qualified before this board. And at this time, I'd ask that Mr. Bush please be sworn and that he give this call.
Sir, raise your right hand and be sworn. Do you swear or affirm that any testimony you give to commission at this proceeding will be the truth, hold truth, nothing but the truth?
I do.
And your name and address, please.
Anthony Bush, Jr., 32 West Front Street, Red Bank, New Jersey, is my office. 797 Tittman Ave, Tittman Falls, New Jersey, is where I currently live. Graduate of Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. And I've been practicing architecture now for about 27 years. I've been in front of numerous boards from Seagirt down south all the way up, Red Bank, Brunson, Little Silver. I believe this is the first time I've been in front of you as a board, so welcome. Hopefully I'll answer all your questions.
Accept
you. Do you want me to do
a roll
call after break?
Well, no, Mr. Stein just indicated.
Yeah, two people step down, otherwise the board is back in front.
Thank you. Yes, I should have indicated that earlier.
Go ahead.
Proceed, please. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So tell us what the Wright County family.
Oh, okay.
At the rest, please.
Anyway, real quick brief history. In 2019, they bought the property. They called me in 2020, came over, we sat down, and we talked about what we need, obviously. The house is, you know, one bath, that's it, three bedroom, small. Two kids, they're in the schools, in the sports, they love it a lot. This street's really kind of neat. There's only three houses on the end of it. It's beautiful lot, it really is. It's up in the middle. And they just, you know, they needed the new house for the expanding family and everything. So we did a quick zoning analysis, and, you know, as we've discussed, I explained to them that because of the severe undersize, because of the septic, because of the issues that we're dealing with, expansion probably wasn't a good idea. So that's why we kind of generated the second floor plan as opposed to trying to bump out anywhere. We literally bumped out about 1.5% just to kind of change up the entrance. The entrance used to just come off, if you look at the A1 floor plan, the existing, it was on the side. So that was a, you know, not really attractive to the architectural aesthetic. Obviously, we wanted to put that on the front. She wanted a pool, too, so that kind of was something that we were going to have to, you know, obviously that's going to go on the outside. So we gave up the garage as well because we needed the mudroom and she wanted to have a workout room. And because we were going up and not expanding, you know, we kind of had to make a tough choice there, too. But their driveway is big enough to hold the cars, so that's not a problem. And then, really, the other thing was that we kept it a three-bedroom because there is a septic, so we didn't want to add that fourth bedroom. And by doing that, we figured we would take the downstairs bedroom, get rid of the closet, and make it a work office, which is pretty common these days, and given the light of the situation in the last 5 years. And that's kind of how we generated the whole second floor approach as opposed to doing any real expansion on the property. And it's a beautiful lot. They love it. They didn't want to leave. They didn't, you know, want to move. They love the neighborhood. And we just kind of getting it to the point where we're getting them some better downstairs space and bigger bedrooms with walk-in closets that are kind of, you know, the norm these days. And the architectural aesthetic was, she was, you know, they kind of made it prominent right away that they were willing to look for something a little bit different than the average short colonial, you know. So that kind of drove the architectural aesthetic, a little more contemporary modern flair, which was kind of fun. And basically, that's pretty much it. If there are any questions or whatever.
One follow-up question, if I may, Mr. Bush. Can you tell the board and the board engineer a little bit about the existing foundation, since we'll be utilizing that, and the intention is not to demolish that, obviously?
Yeah, obviously, that was the first thing we looked at, knowing that we were going up, and it's in great shape. No cracks, no sinkage, no water penetration through it, which is, you know, pretty good. We're up on the top, so that's good. And you know, any point loads from the new stuff, obviously, we'll deal with maybe an interior column during construction documents. But, you know, I don't see any problems at all. And that was very important because that was the first thing we looked at, knowing that we were going up.
And follow-up question, Mr. Bush. The slight increase in the front entrance. Can you just review what the square footage of that is from the board, right? That's the only place where we're expanding.
Yeah, we're 1.5%, so it's literally under, you know, probably 100 square feet. And it was just to get the front door centered on the elevation. And we're going to have a little patio up in the front where you see the two doors, because that's the existing foundation anyway. That was like a kind of like an old patio that's there, so we weren't going to get rid of it. We didn't want to do any demolition and make a mess, so we'll just leave it a nice patio. But if you look at the front elevation, you know, now you can clearly see that the front door is going to be prominent on the architectural aesthetic. And by losing the garage door, we're going to have a nice side entrance, which will facilitate getting into a mudroom, because there's no mudroom in the house, and that's tough with kids and sports and basketballs and soccer and lacrosse sticks and that kind of stuff. So that was another genesis of the elevation on that side as well, architecturally. Material-wise, we're looking for a little bit more of a contemporary feel as well. We're going to use some metal roof. The arched roof on the top is clearly an architectural aesthetic that's not seen much, but there are a couple houses up in this subdivision that have kind of started going that route, and really nice ones. And she liked them, and Paul liked them, and I said, you know, let's go that route if you like. And we're thinking probably like a hardy concrete siding, because it gets that northeast wind, rain, a lot of big trees, a lot of stuff. So something pretty durable, something like that, you know.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, I have no further questions than Mr. Bush on direct.
Sir, Ben, would you like to lead off with the
just one question. Is there an existing basement or cellar?
There is.
And is that included in the calculation for floor coverage?
Yes, yes, yeah, because we were over the 7-foot mark in the one area that's finished, so we had to use, I believe, 50% of that, and that got thrown into the numbers as well. All the numbers that we're looking at, you know, obviously, in a 30,000 square foot zone, we're only 11.8. Right off the bat, we knew this was going to be, you know, that's why we didn't expand, because any expansion would have really just blew the numbers out as it was. So we're staying over the existing footprint, other than the 1.5% for the entry, pretty much for that reason as well. You know.
Thank you. Questions from the board? From Mr. Bush? Any questions from the public? Anybody on Zoom, Brian?
There are 4 attendees, no hands raised.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bush, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bush. Applicant now calls Douglas Cullen, licensed engineer.
Hello again. Mr. Cullen, raise your right hand. If you swore to you, you swear affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding be the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do, yes.
And do you want to just
give a very brief synopsis?
Very brief synopsis.
Let me start by the first question. Have you ever been qualified as an expert by this board?
I have, yes. It's nice, in fact, yeah. Doug Cullen, professional engineer. License is a good stand.
Do you have any questions from the board?
Board members, thank you. Great. Mr. Cullen, can you review with the board the exhibit that's up on the screen and locate this property relative to the neighbors and the addition that's proposed?
Sure. I'm going to mark this what it is so that we can give them marking.
A13.
And can you describe this?
Sure, this is a site rendering of our proposed plot plan. It's basically a colorized version of the plot plan that was submitted as part of our board application.
Before I have to squint, what's the date on
it? For you. September 9th.
You
look
busy that day.
That was the popular day.
So the address, 3 Beverly Place, Lot 6, Lot 1.02, containing 11,836 square feet, 0.27 acres, located on the west side of Beverly Place, between Ocean Boulevard and East Highland Avenue. We are zoned in the R3 single-family residential zone, and as was mentioned, the applicant is seeking approval to construct a second-story addition to the existing one-story dwelling.
An in-ground swimming pool shown back left of the plan, and with a full patio surround, a modified rear patio, and a new front walkway. The applicant is requesting D4 use variance approval for exceeding the maximum floor area permitted in the subject zone and various bulk relief variance bulk relief. Various bulk relief for the second story addition, full patio, lot coverage, and building coverage. So I'll just run through some of the existing nonconformities. As I mentioned, it is an undersized lot at 11,836 square feet, where 30,000 square feet is required. The minimum lot shape diameter is 62.01 feet, where 65 feet is required. The minimum one side yard setback principal building of 10.1 feet, where 15 feet is required. And that is located here on the back left corner of the existing home.
South side.
The minimum combined side yard setback principal building of 23.9 feet, whereas 30 feet is required. A building coverage of 17.48%, whereas 12% is permitted, and an impervious coverage of 34.1%, where 30% is permitted. In terms of the proposed variances, I can run through those as well. The existing non-conforming side yard setback of 10.1 feet is not proposed to change, and the addition is being constructed on the other side of the dwelling, so that will remain unchanged. 24.12 feet is proposed for the combined side yard setback, which is an improvement over the existing condition, but still requires a variance. Also, the minimum accessory structure side yard setback of 6.56 feet is proposed, whereas 11.2 feet exists and 10 feet is required, and that is relative to the 3-foot full patio surround in the back left corner. The maximum building coverage is proposed at 18.81%, where 17.48 exists and 12% is permitted. The maximum impervious coverage is proposed at 38.69%, whereas 34.1% exists and 30% is permitted. And the maximum usable floor area ratio, I have it listed as a percent, but 36.2% is proposed, where 14.5% is existing and 17.5% is permitted. Also, the maximum lot coverage permitted subject to the steep slope requirements is 3,334 square feet, whereas a lot coverage of 4,033.4 square feet exists and 4,579.1 square feet is proposed. And finally, the maximum impervious surface area permitted subject to the steep slope requirements is 3,884 square feet, where an impervious area of 3,234.5 square feet exists and 3,955 square feet is proposed. That is a slight correction from our plan. In preparing for the testimony, we had it inclusive of the existing and proposed rear deck on further review. It is a wooden deck with gap deck boards, and there's permeable material underneath. And we had previously confirmed with CME that those would not be included as it relates to steep slopes in the impervious surface calculation.
Can you just repeat the impervious numbers again?
Sure. So, subject to the steep slope requirements, so the maximum permitted is 3,884 square feet, whereas an impervious area of 3,234.5 square feet exists, and 3,955.5 square feet is proposed.
Next.
Just slightly non-conforming.
Mr. Chairman, I do agree with those numbers that he provided.
That's a big difference than these.
Yep.
So,
yes. Thank you. The existing utilities will remain and be reutilized. speaking to some of the stormwater management that is proposed. In the back left corner of the property, we are proposing a pool. There's an existing patio here that's going to be modified as part of the pool and adding the pool patio surround at 3.5. We're proposing a channel drain, which will completely surround the exterior limits of the pool patio surround. That'll be connected to a small underground pipe, which will eventually lead to an overflow inlet proposed near the public right-of-way. Also connected to that same pipe is a pipe which is essentially going to fully surround the proposed existing home in addition, so that all of the existing downspouts can connect to the nuclear collection system. I'll just go through what I have here. Because we're proposing, we're capturing all these impervious surfaces, it'll eventually be discharged here, very close to the public right-of-way. Ultimately, that's where, as an engineer, I always want to get the stormwater management to go. Big picture, it winds up, Pebroot Place has a crown road, which follows the existing gutter line down East Highland Avenue, and there's an existing storm sewer inlet just around the corner, which is the ultimate where it'll be collected by the municipal system. So this is the ideal scenario as far as stormwater management runoff goes, and neighboring property will be protected. Existing drain patterns will be maintained and actually improved because previously the runoff from the roof of the home was discharged at grade where it flowed over land towards the way the property grading exists. Some of those downspouts flow towards the neighboring property, so we're eliminating that, capturing it, and getting out to the public right away.
Is it fair to say that's a significant improvement from the existing condition in terms of the roof?
Yes,
the existing downspouts.
Absolutely, thank you. Because in a proposed condition, that would no longer be the case. In terms of parking, two spaces are required for the proposed three-bedroom renovated dwelling, and two occupied spaces are proposed to remain in the driveway, and there's also the garage as well. Moving on to the steep slopes, I'll pull up our submitted plan.
Not to correct you, but I think the garage is being converted, right? Just so our record's clear.
Oh, you're correct.
Thank you.
But there are...
There's adequate parking, though, in terms of...
Yes, in the driveway.
Okay,
sorry about that.
Just wanted to clarify the record. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Yep, thank you.
There's not a whole lot of existing steep slopes, mostly around the perimeter.
You're referring now to the plot plan, sorry.
Yes, plot plan is dated 12/9/22, last revised 6/30/23, and that is revision one.
Thank you.
And this is the steep slope analysis, sheet 103. Really on the outskirts of the property, here you can see shaded, those are the steep slope areas. There is an existing septic system, which I'll get to in a minute. The largest portion of the lot, which is, almost all of it, 10,498 square feet, is less than 15% slopes. If the lot were a compliant size or even, slightly larger, the steep slope lot coverage would also comply. The proposed coverage and impervious surface variance is more driven by the undersized lot, which is about one third of the required size for the zone, than the percentage of steep slopes on the property. And as I mentioned, if the lot was a little bigger, we could easily comply. We comply with the disturbance, and ultimately the only portion of steep slopes we are disturbing is in the rear yard by the pool, which will be properly stabilized with grass. In the proposed condition, will still be mowable. The pool is proposed really in the only viable option as far as locations go, since there's an existing septic system on the other side of the yard. In order to comply with the setback requirements of the New Jersey Administrative Code, the pool needs to go on the south side.
Could you show the board the approximate location of that septic system?
Yeah.
Just
referring now to the, back to the block plan?
Yes, it was a...
Not a super close.
Yep, the block plan, sheet 2 or 3. So coming out of basically the center point of the house, there is a septic tank and a pump tank going straight back off the back of the house. Then over to the far right-hand side is the location of the sinkage pit. We did review some of the inspection reports that have been performed for the property to be able to find and locate it on the plan. So the pool really can't go anywhere else.
And just for the record, it's your understanding, based on the review of those inspection reports, that the septic system currently functions properly?
Yes.
Thank you. Correct. So we get that in the record, too.
Mm-hmm. So as I previously mentioned, in terms of runoff from the patio, that will all be captured and conveyed to the public right away. And the pool is really much narrower than typical. It's only about 10 feet wide. So that's about the end of my direct testimony, but I have some responses here to the board engineer's review letter I can run through.
Maybe we'll just pause, Mr. Chairman, and just ask if the board has any questions of Mr. Romeyer.
We do.
looking at Mr. Romeyer's letter. Mr. Collins' testimony today.
Sure, we can. Ben, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, a couple of real quick things. The drainage system that's proposed, is there any type of like emergency overflow or anything if the self drain in the front of the property gets clogged or if the pipe is crushed or something like that? Anything to prevent the drains coming off of the roof leaders from bubbling out of the channel drain around the pool?
Yeah, we can, if it's not already on there, we'll make sure we add that detail. We can add overflows at each one of the downspouts so that the overflow happens there rather than in the rear yard.
Okay. You were probably going to get to it, but I'll just ask you right now anyway. Are there any concerns with the impact of the pool on the septic system from like a geotechnical standpoint in the steep slope area?
No, I don't think so. We're far enough away that I don't see any potential impacts to the existing septic system.
Do you know what the distance from the pool to the septic system is?
I can scale it really quick.
To the field or the tank?
The tank
and the field.
Tank and the field. So we're required to be 30 feet from the seepage pit. And we are a little over 60 feet from the seepage pit, and from the tanks, about 17 feet, which also does comply with the setback requirements of NJAC.
Metro code?
Yes.
Did you do any type of geotechnical for that?
We did not. Our stormwater management design doesn't rely on the soils for infiltration or anything like that. We weren't the designers of the original septic system, but I wouldn't expect at that distance any interference in terms of compaction or anything like that. So. I don't have an issue with it.
Okay. How about the grading off of the edge of the pool? What's the slope going down from the pool to the property line in that 6.56?
The west side?
Yeah. Sure. So that is proposed at a 3:1 slope.
And you said that because of the location of the pool, of the septic system,
there's no other spot on the property to go, and getting closer to the septic system.
I would want to know, moving over to the right, we're kind of right at the limits here for separation from a septic tank or distribution box, which is required to be at least 10 feet.
So I think it's fair to say, is it a problem that the site constraints because of what was already existing and developed at the site kind of limited the options as to, again, not being able to expand the footprint of the structure, number one, number two, providing a smaller pool, and number three, locating that pool in the center of the southwest corner to preserve the integrity and functionality of the septic system.
Yes, I would say that's a fair assessment.
Okay, thank you.
The septic can handle the extra bathrooms? Is there been?
So it's actually based on the number of bedrooms. So okay. Without a change in bedroom, yes, it would still comply.
That's all I have. I know Mr. Mahone's going to go through the rest of our report and address each item. So
we do. Yeah, we're ready for that.
Thank you.
You want to ask questions from the boards now, or do you want to with whatever is easier for you? I think we should be able to ask questions. Now?
Yeah, sure.
So your testimony is that the slope to the west of the corner of the pool, you don't think that going to a 3-to-1 slope. Against the existing slope is increasing more water flow in a small area to that neighboring property.
So the good news is anything tributary to that slope in terms of impervious surface we're capturing and getting out towards the right of way.
You have a perimeter drain around the pool patio, right?
That is correct.
But not to the outside of the slope.
I'm just talking about sheet flow.
Yeah.
From the existing original grade, now you're creating a 3-to-1 steeper slope there to the neighboring property a short distance.
Yeah, in terms of runoff coefficients for that type of ground cover, you don't traditionally see a whole lot because of it's either grass or some other type of vegetation. So I don't see it causing an increase to that property line. I feel as though we've mitigated the potential impact with the channel drain.
What is there now that's there? Is it grass? Is there trees being removed?
We're not proposing to remove any trees, but the backyard is, besides the existing deck, there is an existing patio back there, which is being somewhat shrunken to fit the pool patio around. Those are the only changes in the rear yard. So the in terms of pattern, the drainage pattern, it's really staying the same. And I would add, maybe even because everything's draining this way towards the channel drain, there's an opportunity for the drain to pick up some of this runoff and get it out safely to the street, whereas in the existing condition, it's just probably going to pass right by and go to the neighbor. So I see an improvement there as well.
So I guess I'm not understanding how everything's draining towards the channel drain if the drainage is going towards the top left of the slope. I guess, could you tell me what, it's a 3-to-1 slope is what's proposed from that top left corner of the pool patio to the mm-hmm. edge of the property line. What is it existing?
In terms of this existing slope there?
Yeah. So from, I know you, estimating that same exact spot existing.
Right. There's a few contours over here on their property, which are close to 3-to-1, probably maybe 4 or 5-to-1 here. So what we're proposing
say here, could you just describe that?
So that would be southwest corner on neighboring lot 1.01. There's 223, 224, and 225 contour
right here in a relatively small space. So the contours for 226, 227, 228 that we're proposing match up relatively well in terms of slope to what already exists there. And then the point I was trying to make before about, you know, if you consider the channel drain around the pool, you're really limiting the drainage area towards that property line to anything southwest of the channel drain. Because by adding that, we're capturing everything that drains off the pool patio. But then also, it'll be at an elevation where it can capture a lot of this runoff as well, which was previously going to lock 1.01, and it'll get captured and wind up in Beverly Hills Place right away.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
I have a question, Ben, you might also want to weigh in on this. This is in the steep slope area. Typically when we have an application that's in a steep slope area, it's actually on slope. This happens to be on top. If it's not the exact top, it's close. We would typically want some type of geotechnical survey, you know, done to ensure that the disturbance, you know, whether it's an accessory structure, pool addition, that the disturbance of that soil is not going to have some type of ancillary effect down further down the slope. Is there a reason for us to be concerned with that?
Well, it's, you bring up a good point. It is in the steep slope area. The existing slope of, you know, where the pool is looks like it. I know we just talked about the slope of a neighbor's property being close to 3-1. The existing slope on the subject property is about 8% where the pool is being proposed. It's a valid request, and you know, if the board needs to see a geotechnical report or some type of analysis, you know, I would support that.
We could provide that, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know if the board reviews that or if the board relies on the board engineer's review of it, but we could provide it either way.
Yes, CME would.
No objection to that.
Yeah.
Because what Mr. Revolver is getting at also, too, is it's not going to just affect that one property to the south. It's going to affect the one behind that, the one on the corner of Highland Avenue and Bedrow.
Or even further.
Affect that second lot, the one directly behind it is elevated, and the one to the north is also elevated from that property.
All right, that's my question. I don't know if it will, but I also know if it won't.
Yeah, we can certainly provide that report as requested.
Thank you.
No, okay.
So more of a drainage issue. I mean, they're on the other side of Ocean Hall.
It's construction and drainage, right? Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's a disturbance, right? I mean, it's an obvious disturbance.
Yeah, it's more of a drainage.
Not necessarily, but it could be a slope too. Because we don't know the topography for the elevations, and you're putting all that added weight right there on that corner of that.
Like if you go up to Bedford,
yeah, I'm familiar with it. It's just, to me, it seems like we're far enough away from the slump. We're on the other side of Ocean Boulevard.
Where it really starts.
Yes.
That's definitely right. I agree with that.
I think we're far enough. I'd hate to see everybody start coming in here on a steep slope. It seems more of like a draining issue than a slump to me. So I think it's more like, what are we doing with the runoff?
I think by getting, you know, the last thing you want is really saturated soils. So we're not proposing to infiltrate anything, and we're proposing to capture that surface runoff, get it out to a stable paved surface, so where it can find its way to the inlet around on East Highland Avenue. So to me, I think the benefit's there in terms of, you know, getting that surface runoff out of the soil and out onto a stable paved.
I think that should be a concern, not the whole slope.
Not the
more of the drainage. I think we're far enough. You know, that's more important to us. I mean, if it was closer to steep slope, obviously, but I don't want to see people start coming in here and then.
No, I understand.
I think it's, if we just concentrate on the drainage, I think we'll be all right.
Is the slope, and this might be getting into the weeds, but I thought slop-lock was a specific soil type that's endemic to our area. And I don't know where that is. Like, I literally have no idea. I know it's in the steep slope area, but I don't know where it occurs. My understanding is that there's pockets of it, but I don't have a soil map.
I prefer to know rather than think.
Yeah.
It's primary sloping is on the coastline on the bluff.
Okay.
Could I make a suggestion, Chairman and to the Board of Engineers? So oftentimes, you resolve this problem, in my experience, with a graduated approach. You might start with soil borings in the area of the pool, and then provide those soil borings. And to the extent the soil borings reveal a greater issue that necessitates, in your judgment, then the geotech, we could then ramp it up to that if we need it. But to this gentleman's point, I think we don't want to gild the lily here. However, we want to make sure, to the board's concern, that issues, obviously we're all sensitive, you know, as to issues in the Borough of Atlantic Highlands as to swamp and soils and what have you. Certainly we understand that. In that way, it could be graduated at your engineer's discretion. So if we need both, we'll provide both. And conversely, if the borings show that the soil is appropriate and that we're not going to get into a slump issue because of the soil borings relative to where the pool is, and the engineer says it's not necessary, then it's not necessary. And we'll defer 100% to the engineer's discretion.
We also don't want to put the applicant in a position where they have to give more than they need to, you know what I mean? But at the same time,
we've actually had pools built on the slope.
I don't
think this is anywhere near.
No, I agree, but at the same time, I wouldn't want to find out.
Better be safe than sorry, and I think the approach is.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair. Ben, you agree with that, yeah?
I think that's a fair compromise. I was just about to pull up the
Is there different levels of steep slope, or is just anybody up there is on the steep slope? Well, it's the area that it's in, but if you go, if you take Holland, like, all the way to the end, and it ends in Beverwood, which is like,
yeah,
a cul-de-sac almost.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's on top. It's not on like. We talk about like on the slope. It's not on the slope, but it's, I don't know how far away from it is that type of disturbance,
right,
will have an effect. Not so much on the neighbors, but, you know,
it could be the first time
further down, you know, that's all.
So, yeah. I referenced the slope of the area that's been disturbed before as 8%. Reason being because the steep slopes are typically more than 15%. So this is in the steep slope area in town, definitely, but an 8% slope is not necessarily defined as a steep slope. So that's something to consider. But I would be, you know, I don't have an issue with the board requesting that, soil borings, and we can review that and determine if additional work needs to be provided.
We stipulate to that, Mr. Chair.
Good.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Can I just ask, might be a silly question, but we're talking about the septic. Is, mm-hmm. Are they, did you see where the neighbor's septic was? Or is it just the... Does the neighbor have a septic, or are they done? I'm just looking, because I don't know. Is it under these trees over here by Highland Ave, or is it right next to the pool? That's what I'm wondering.
No. The neighbor is here. She can answer.
Sure. 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 Sure.
Maybe we'll call the neighbor up to answer that question, Chairman.
Mr. Gilmore.
Would you please raise your right hand and be sworn? And you either swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And your name and address?
Corinne Cantalino, 320 East Tyler. So this is, show me the person from here.
Yeah, so maybe I'll pull up the.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, so here's what it looks like, the fence, where the fencing is.
Yes.
Okay, so my septic is not here, it's more toward the front of the house.
Okay.
So, when I did hear you talking about why you couldn't put the pool in a different location because of her septic, what kind of effect is that going to have on mine?
So.
Because there's a little slope, right? Where the pool is, and there's a little sloping area. There's a little, there's some grass. And then over my other fence, there's my two septics.
Okay. So the state requirement for separation from a sinkage pit to the to a pool, an in-ground swimming pool, is 30 feet. And I mean, looking eyeballing it here, I think we've got more than 30.
You need 24, right, on her side, if we're set back at 6.5.
Correct. So 30 feet puts you about here. And if you're on the opposite side of this fence, then it's much more than that. It's probably around 60.
Your system, ma'am, is west or south of that, to the left of that fence?
Fence here.
The fence?
Yes.
It's to the left as the board looks at the picture?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So can I ask a further question? I'm glad. But so the state has this, rule in place. But we only look at the subject property when we're measuring? Like, as I'm just a little confused. Like, how about lot 201? How about lot 2? Like, well, lot 2 might be further away, but lot 201?
Mm-hmm.
2.01, I'm sorry.
Over, like, if this is the fence, your septic is right over on
that other side. Yeah, like, I'm just thinking that we don't look at that.
To take into consideration.
Yeah.
It is something we can, so we can over the documents and find out everything we can about existing lots nearby.
Yeah. Well, shouldn't that, I guess I'm kind of even questioning if you're going that close, how could we not have that be part of the course of a.
I think the answer in part depends upon what the administrative code regulation says, whether it's limited to separation within a given property, whether it takes into account neighboring properties. And I don't know the answer offhand.
I would just think that we would want to make sure that's other people.
I say that's a board health issue, so I think you're right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think Katrina, you mentioned something about the steep slope, which I've been hearing this for years. I wanted to cut down trees, and there was a problem. Of course, they said I'm on a steep slope. Okay, but it got rectified. You said that maybe there's like different soils, like in patches. Could it be that, let's say, Carrie's soil is fine, but mine could be a problem? Could it be that close of a difference where there would be a differentiation in the soil?
It's highly unlikely. It's possible.
I mean, if you're going to do a boring air, can you do it on my property too? Would that be something to set my mind at ease? Cause
I think so.
Yeah, that's great.
The house is great. My septic is my big concern.
We're kind of in a twilight zone here with the presentation. So I certainly want to be respectful of the neighbor, but I don't think we're disturbing the neighbor's property.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, so I think the whole reason
if
for
the
doing
is not good enough for me. I'm sorry.
No, I know, I understand and I appreciate that. What we have what generated that discussion was the disturbance, and this disturbance is the pool. So where we would want the borings would just be where the pool is going to go, not necessarily on the
right.
Exactly. So that's. you're talking to just a few feet, so those boorings, I can't imagine would be very different from your property at all. It's pretty much the same.
That was a question, okay. And all, like, the digging for the pool would not have, like, any disruption on the back of my property?
Well, I mean, that would be...
No, we can't go on your property, we can't touch it.
No, I am coming onto my property, I mean, just for, like, the vibration and the digging and whatever is involved.
Those soil samples will reveal whether or not that would be an issue.
An issue. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, where we left off, I think, Mr. Conlon, was we were going to, having stipulated to a two-tier approach, number one, with regard to the soil borings on the applicant's property, and number two, if the board engineer felt it was necessary, then to have a soil analysis done. I think now we're going to address the other comments from Mr. Rohmeyer's letter.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Conlon?
Yes.
Thank you. So, fast forwarding to comment number eight, where the applicant says the applicant should be prepared to discuss following issues with the board. 8A, I will certainly defer to our planner, but just to put a couple of numbers out there, just comparatively speaking, the proposed impervious coverage, our proposed impervious coverage on a 30,000 square foot lot would be approximately 15.3%. If we supply, or even at 20,000 square foot lot, about 23%, which would also comply, and the building coverage on a 30,000 square foot lot is about 7.4%, or 20,000, which is still not compliant, but bigger, 11.1%. 8B, I will absolutely defer to our planner. 8C, same thing, deferring to the architect and planner. 8D, applicable zone, okay, so had to do largely with the applicable zone requirements for maximum height and number of stories. And I will confirm we do comply, and we do have a building height compliance chart shown on our plot plan. 8D, so yes, we did include 50% of the basement as included, as required per ordinance, was included in the FAR calculation.
The architect testified to that effect as well.
Yes. 8F, the existing three bedrooms are being moved upstairs and will remain a three-bedroom home. And as the architect testified, an office is proposed on the first floor with the closet being removed.
Can I just interrupt for just a moment? It's on the CME report, it does say it appears that four bedrooms are proposed. Do you want to address that? It's three bedrooms for sure.
Yes.
Three bedrooms, and Mr. Chairman, the office on the first floor will have the existing closet removed. So the vestiges of that bedroom will be removed.
Understood. Thank you.
And 8G is in regards to stormwater management, which I testified to earlier, we are proposing an improvement over the existing condition by capturing the runoff from impervious surfaces near the pool and piping it out to the right-of-way. Also included in that is the runoff from the roof area of the well. 8H, the proposed grade, in our engineering opinion, is stable, can be mowed, can be maintained, and will be further stabilized with vegetation and grass. 8I, actually that was, so our plan does indicate that the proposed plans show the roof leaders to be collected in addition to the pool patio as was specified to and shown on the plan. 8J, no trees are proposed to be removed as part of this application. In the event any tree removal would be necessary, we would certainly agree to file the proper tree removal permit accordingly. 8K, location of the proposed pool, we've touched on that at length. The proposed pool location was driven largely by the existing septic, and required distances from the septic in accordance with, the New Jersey Administrative Code, and to address the 9-foot separation, we feel is sufficient for safety, and the balcony, is intended only for use by the master bedroom. We've talked about this before, that it can be locked, you know, it's really just for that master suite use. 8L, the applicant would agree to screen plantings around the proposed pool equipment. 8M, I can confirm, adequate spacing provided between the pool and the existing septic system. 8N, talks about the proposed fence. So there's an existing fence, which they plan to reutilize as much as possible, as much as the pool code allows. The height of it is fine. The gates need to be reworked, in order to be self-latching. But certainly we'll handle that with proper notation on the plan that, any fences will need to meet the, we'll need to be safety code, pool code compliant, correct? 8O.
I'm sorry, about the fence.
Yes.
Is there a specific height? Is it a new fence or just existing to remain?
So we did show a proposed fence, but in further talks with our client, they want to keep the existing fence, which I believe is a 6-foot tall fence, correct? So, the only thing that would need to change is the self-latching of the gates.
Correct.
Which could be a way to ask about.
O, confirmed, and we can add a note to the plan confirming same. 8P, we don't anticipate, so this is about construction access and methods. We don't anticipate a large excavator being required for the pool. The fence may need to be temporarily taken down, but there is sufficient space to get equipment back there. The proposed pool is also, will be gunite, which can be, pumped from the driveway. 8Q, the applicant agrees to comply, and a note will be added to the plan confirming same. 8R, the applicant agrees to comply, and a note will be added to the plan confirming same. 8S, the applicant agrees to comply, and a note will be added to the plan confirming same. And 8T, typo on the plan, and yes, the contours can be revised accordingly.
That concludes the questions set forth in the CME letter. I have no further questions, Chair. Mr. Conlon, at this time.
Thank you. Do you have anything else?
Nothing else.
All right. Board? Any questions?
If there wasn't any pool, would that reduce the number of variances needed?
It certainly impact lot coverage.
Yeah, is it just the building coverage would be the only variance needed, I think?
Well, I think the lot coverage were over by about 560 feet, and of that, of course, 300 is the pool at 10 by 30, so roughly 60% of it is the pool, but we're still over a little bit.
Right, but the building coverage is the one that I'm thinking that
The building coverage is only expanding by the front there.
So that's
about 1.5%. I think the architect testified to be about 100 square feet.
Right, so I think that is the only variance.
Side setback, the pool patio.
Setback.
Yeah, but if there was no pool.
The pool clearly impacted, it's there's no question about it. The pool impacts the lot coverage. Yeah. But so we try to, you know, mindful of those numbers, we try to have a very modestly sized pool at 10 feet wide and 30 feet long.
Because as of right now, the lot coverage is non-conforming.
It is non-conforming presently, yes. We're going up about 560 feet, if I remember something like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else?
Just one other small thing. The drawing, the rendering there, it looks like there's a garage on the left-hand side. I just thought, and you said there was no garage, so I'm looking in the, on this board right here.
The garage is being converted.
Yeah, that one is not
garage there now.
That's an older iteration on the engineer's side, but the architectural plans proper show the, on the left side, show the garage, and I believe the architect testified that this would be a mudroom door.
Yep.
That's what I'm going to make sure of, because that's what I'm seeing.
We all want to make sure the record is clear. Thank you very much.
Do we have any questions from the public? Any questions on the panel?
Doors and leaves are in grace.
Mr. Cullen, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cullen. Applicant now calls Barbara Allen, licensed professional planner.
Raise your right hand if you swear to me, swear affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be truthful, nothing but the truth.
Yes, I do.
Name and address.
My name is Barbara Allen. My last name is Ehlen. My business address is 315 Route 34, Suite 129 in Colts Neck, New Jersey.
Ms. Allen, could you briefly place your professional credentials on the record, please?
I'm a licensed professional planner in the state of New Jersey and an AICP. I've worked with Beacon Planning since 2008 and I'm a principal at the firm. I testified before numerous committees throughout New Jersey.
Including this one?
Including this one.
Mr. Chairman, board members?
She's accepted.
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
So as was testified to, this application this evening is seeking to renovate an existing home to modernize, same as the home dates to the 1960s. And on the undersized and slightly irregularly shaped lot. As was previously noted, the lot is about 39% or about a third of what is required within the district. The lot is actually also quite unique in that on the railroad, it's the only home to face along that roadway. So homes to the north and south face to those adjoining streetways instead of Bever Out. And so, in effect, the home is bordered by rear yards on all its perimeters. Previously, as I noted, the master plan for the community does seek to reinforce and strengthen your residential neighborhoods. And in this instance, the family wants to stay in the community and is seeking a method by which to renovate the home so that it can accommodate a modern family. And so, we are reinvesting in this residential neighborhood. The variance is requested. The majority would, you know what, let me back up. The FAR variance is a D variance, but in this case, we would go to the Coventry standard. So the Coventry standard shifts the focus not on to the use or anything like that, but just solely onto the deviation that we're looking for. And in this case, it's the FAR area ratio of 0.175 is permitted, where 0.145 exists, and 0.362 is proposed. Floor area ratios are really derived, you know, to prevent big mansions and oversized homes in residential neighborhoods. But that's not what we're looking at here. A part of this floor area ratio is attributed to the basement, which is obviously not visually obvious from the street front. And the rest of the floor area ratio is a second floor addition, but it respects the first floor addition's footprint. It doesn't actually cover that entire first floor. It's a major problem over half of it, but it's still not the full area. So we're not talking about a big mansion or an overbuild of the site. Floor area ratio is actually more driven in this part by the sphere oversized nature of the home, of the lot, than necessarily the oversized nature of the home. When we're looking at the variances for bulk variances, the majority would qualify in the C1, which is a hardship. Again, a lot of this is driven by the fact that this parcel is severely undersized for the district. Existing conditions, minimum lot area, minimum lot shape diameter, minimum side yard setback, combined side yard setback, rear yard setback for the home, are all existing conditions that are proposed for me. When I look at the accessory structure, so pool is our question, and obviously we've discussed drainage and everything, but we're looking at the setbacks with my testimony in particular. The minimum side yard setback is 10 feet required, where 6.56 feet is proposed. I know that, as I stated, this backyard is surrounded by other backyards, and a rear yard setback home is 5 feet would be permitted, that would be required, and we meet that standard. Additionally, the setback is to the pool patio around it, so it's not the same visual intrusion as like a shed or something like that. It's grade level, obviously. And it's a modest patio to surround the pool, and it actually provides, it's a safety for when kids are climbing in and out of the pool, instead of having them slip on grass or something of that nature. It provides a small surround so that they can hopefully not run, maybe 40 feet around the pool. With respect to the building coverage, as we stated, a small increase is proposed to try and reorient the front facade, which create a more, you know, pronounced entranceway. The majority of the square footage is, again, on the second floor, proposed second floor. Lot coverage, because again, this is mainly being driven by the proposed pool. Pools are a customary accessory used to a single family home. Not all lots are perfect for them, but they are anticipated within the district. And the home is not, the applicant is not proposing one that is oversized or dramatic in any way. They've located it where it can be located, as specified to avoid the septic tank. And it is in a location that can accommodate it. And again, presents a minimal impact as again stated, its rear yard surrounding. Steep slopes and coverage and impervious coverage. Again, these are more driven by the fact that the lot is so undersized. If it was a standard lot, we'd be well within. And as we specified also too, if it was just modestly a little bit larger, we could also accommodate it. With respect, when we go through these, I would find that variances also promote under the municipal language law. A, to provide sufficient space in appropriate locations. This is a residential home in a residential neighborhood. A second story is proposed, but there is a mixture of homes in the neighborhood. The home to the north is a two-story dwelling. The Waddle home to the south is a ranch, but due to grading, the basement appears to be a walkout towards the rear. Also, and to encourage coordination of the various public and private procedures and activities shaping land development, the view of lessening the cost of such development with the more efficient use of land. The applicant is proposing a second-story addition over an existing first-floor home, reutilizing that structure. The pool has been placed in the most logical place in the backyard to minimize impacts to both adjoining homeowners and to the property itself. Can best be accommodated. With respect to substantial detriment, I don't have to see any. It's not going to generate any more traffic, noise, or trash. Stormwater will be handled as was testified to and as will be worked out with the community with soil borings and the like. Therefore, it is my opinion that the applicant has met the statutory criteria and that variances can be granted. Are there any questions that I may answer?
Ben, you start. Do you have any?
I don't think I have any questions.
Very good. Board? Any questions from the public? You must have done a great job.
That concludes the applicant's formal case at this time. Chairman, subject to comments from the public, of course.
Or do you want to summary up?
If I could reserve summary before after any public comment.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We're going to open the floor now to any public comment. Sir, come forward, please.
My name is Anthony Skoko. I live in the house just to east of Carrie and Paul's house.
Sir, let me swear you in so that your testimony is under oath. Just raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding is the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So I live to the east of Carrie and Paul's house. I'm here to support their application. The house that they live in now is a tired old house. The new design will enhance the aesthetics of the neighborhood. They're a wonderful family. They're a tremendous addition to the community, and I support them 100%.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Blake Deacon.
Sir, do you swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection to this proceeding be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I swear. Go ahead. Hi, I'm here also in support of Carrie and Paul's application. I'm a neighbor also in the R3 zone. Similarly, I've received a similar set of variances from this planning board. I think everybody understands the complexity of the R3 zone and the intent behind many of the requirements. I found the planner's explanation to be compelling in terms of the explanation for how all the positive criteria were satisfied. I would encourage the board to strongly encourage the board to approve this application. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Any other questions in the public? Any questions on the show?
There is one. Hang on. Rod Collins. So, Michael Pato, who's coming right now?
This is Robin Ginsburg and Chris Formley. We are neighbors of Greg Fate and Paul Wright. We are very supportive of the project. We feel that it will be a huge benefit to the neighborhood. All of us walk our dog up East Highland to Bever Out, over to the park. We have all of our children playing in the community, use Chris property, the whole. It would be a great place for the community to gather. It would be accretive to the values of the properties in our area. And we would just like to offer our support for what she and Paul are trying to accomplish here. Overall, a huge asset to our neighborhood.
Can each of you raise your right hand, please? Do you each either swear or affirm that the testimony that you have given and any additional testimony you may give is the truth, for all truth, nothing but the truth?
Not sure we heard you, but if we have to say yes, but yes. We're very supportive of the project. We hope that Carrie and Paul are successful because we think that it will increase the value of all the add to our community in terms of what it brings to the neighborhood and all our children who gather at the various neighborhood houses. And we just wish them the best and hope that the community will approve everything.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That is right.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you. Please, one moment. Yes. Very briefly, Chairman Borgman, I'd like to express my sincere thanks. I believe we presented a thorough case on behalf of Ms. Kennedy and Mr. Wright and their family. And I'd also like to thank the board engineer for his suggestions with regards to the two-phase approach on the soils aspect. Again, I know how very serious a concern that is here in the borough of Atlantic Valley. So, again, thank you for the opportunity to make the presentation. We ask the board respectfully to approve the application at this time. Thank you.
For discussion.
The pool gives me pause. It's really close to the property line. I don't know. I'm not a structural engineer. I don't know what the structural impact is to, you know, whatever, steep slope, neighboring things, what, anything like that. But further, the land just right outside to the left corner of the pool is graded to drain across the property line, you know, and regardless, regardless of that there's a drain around the pool edging, that's not what we're supposed to do. I wish that this application was just the building, but it's not.
Okay. I agree. I like all the variances and the degree of the variances. It's not just a little bit here or there, on the larger size. And with the absence of the pool, changes it significantly.
Yep.
Yeah. And a lot of the professionals are saying, well, if there's a larger property, the variance wouldn't be there. But it's not a larger property. It is what it is. So it doesn't make a difference. If it was larger, it would conform. I just think there's too much there that are going against it.
That was an agreement. I was going to bring up the same point, so I'm in agreement with you. Yeah, I could see a hardship. You know, I don't want to sound disrespectful or anything, but I could see a hardship with, you know, needing more room in the house to go up, you know, getting a variance for that kind of thing. But for a pool, are we willing to, is that a necessity for the property?
No, I asked, my concern about the pool is the septics and the other, and honestly, I don't know, we review applications and nobody's mentioned it, and maybe I don't know enough, but it's a big hole in the ground, right? If we're talking about a steep slope, I'm not really, like, we talk about little foundations around 5 feet from the existing house, but this is a hole, I don't know.
Right, so that's...
I need more information.
No, I brought it up, so, and the reason I did that was for that very reason. We understand that it's not, when we talk about the steep slope as a general area, it's not on, like, hanging off a cliff, but it is in that zone, which is why we, the applicant has agreed to that two-step approach, or there's a boring sample, and if those samples indicate that there might be an issue, then they would take it to the next level to ensure. Because it's like, for me, it's not so much the adjoining properties, it's the properties further away.
I think these decisions to be made by a professional.
Right.
We can't just say, we don't think it's a good idea, they shouldn't have a pool.
I think it should be,
you have to let the professional tell you if it's right. A good idea to have a pool or not.
Right. Which is why we...
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm also concerned about the septic tanks or areas in lot 2.01 and lot 1.01.
Yeah, Ben, maybe you can weigh in on that, because
yeah.
It would seem to me that's not a so the planning board's not, we can't really concern themselves with something that, like, the health department in that case should
right.
be.
So the, based on the testimony of the neighbor on lot point 1.01, the septic system appears to be far enough away from the pool that there's no issue. With regard to lot 2.01, we don't know exactly where the septic system is. However, based on the aerial image provided and the topography, there's not, at least in the 5 feet or 10 feet off of the property line, where the survey was conducted, there's not a flat area where there would be a septic system, and there are trees in that area. So, in order for there to be a septic field, you have to have a relatively flat area, and it wouldn't have any trees on it.
Gotcha.
So, I can't tell you exactly where it is because it's not shown on the plan or on the aerial, but that's something that can be verified.
Right.
Just one thing with the pool, too. I mean, I did have some pause there, but I do think the way that the property is sloped, it is going towards the street. If it was sloping down towards the hill, I think that would give more concern there. I think with the tiered approach to the professionals to look at the soil, that gives me more confidence in it, but it is, you know, exceeding the impervious surface coverage up to almost 40%, you know, which is, we require 30%. You know, without the pool, I think it's a very easy yes. You know, and I agree in terms of, you know, you don't want to strip anybody, you know, from having a pool or anything like that, but that's kind of where at least I stood on some of the things. But I do feel more confident knowing that some of the runoff is going to be going towards the street and being caught into some of the systems that they have in place.
Can I just clarify one thing? I just want to make sure the board understands the difference between the maximum lot coverage and the maximum impervious area. So the maximum lot coverage is, the proposed is 4,579.1 square feet, where it's where the required is 3,334. That's about a 1,200 square foot difference. the maximum impervious area, 3,884, is required, and the proposed is 3,955.5, which was discussed before. The difference between those two is that the wooden deck is not counted as impervious area, according to the ordinance, because it has, you know, it's open to the ground beneath it. So the overage in the impervious area is only by about 70 square feet or so.
Okay. So what percentage would that drop that down to then? Because I'm looking at on three, exhibit 5.2, the table one, not on the following page.
Mm-hmm. Steep stuff is what he's referring.
So on the table one, the bulk standards for the steep slope area, that would be 1.8% over that required 3,884. The lot coverage is still the same as shown in our table there, but the impervious area is the lowest.
I have a comment. I think this is a great addition to the neighborhood. From what I've seen in the last 3 years, this is the style everybody's going for, and it's towards the Victorian area. So they kind of identified their own area with these style houses. I think it's, you know, really nice. As for undersized lot, in that area, there's a lot of undersized lots, all right? And these people are just looking to raise a family, and they're trying to make their house conditions that everybody else has to raise a family, and they're just trying to do that in their backyard. And what's happening now in town, they're landlocked. Summertime. They can't go to the beach, they can't go to the swim clubs. That's a fact. They just want to have a place where their family can enjoy themselves during the summer months. I think that outweighs any negative towards not having the built-in pool. I think all they're doing is they want what everybody else has. I don't see that it's going to be that a great impact on the area. They just want what everybody else has. I think they deserve it, you know. Atlantic Highlands is a nice town, you know. A lot of those lots are undersized. And we've actually issued built-in pools, approved built-in pools on the steep slope, literally on the steep slope. I don't think the steep slope has anything, is going to have any impact. I would just like these people have a, you know, what everybody else has. It's an undersized lot, and that's a lot of, there's a lot of undersized lots in town, and we have to accept that fact. And they just want to raise a family. When it's 100 degrees, they just want to go in the pool. You know, what are you going to do? Sit in the air conditioning with all the kids? Yeah. Oh, come over to my house for 4th of July. It's 100 degrees. What do? Everybody sits in the house? They just want to enjoy it.
The pool's barely bigger than my
truck. They just want to enjoy life.
Yeah, it's pretty small. It's a pretty small pool.
Let's let them enjoy life, enjoy Atlantic Highlands.
I just want to make a point, though. Whenever we have an application that is located on the slope, we have to address
half of the town is steep.
I understand that, but I agree with you. I agree with everything that you just said, every single thing that you just said. But I just want you to know that
a soil test. I think that's, and they said they would do more.
Exactly, but if we have an application that is on the slope, if we don't address it on the record, I think that we are doing a disservice.
I agree.
We just at least have to recognize that, yeah, we understand it's on the slope. The applicant understands it's on the slope. Everybody understands that it's on the slope. It's been mentioned. It's on the record. And we move on. Right? Because if you don't mention it, then tomorrow on Facebook,
I didn't mention the state slope.
Any other comments?
I want to talk about the steep slope. I'd make a motion to approve based on the condition of, if they did find anything within the soil test, that they would just further look into that. Correct.
So that's going to be including the front downspout overflows, it's going to include the soils report, and if required after that, from CME, geotech report. It's going to include the responses. I'm not going to go through them ad nauseum, but B through T of paragraph 8 of the CME letter. That's what I've got.
That's what my motion entails.
Well, let me add one more thing. The applicant's going to verify the distance between the pool and the septics on lots 2 to 221. I think it's going to happen anyway because the health department, yeah, when they come in for the permits, the health department's going to look at it and they're going to require you to provide that anyway. But we're going to put that in the condition.
Agreed. So we have a motion.
Give me a second. I second it.
Tacamo, second.
Mr. Tacamo?
Yes.
Mr. Hall?
Yes.
Mr. Jasso?
Yes.
Mr. Kaczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Kaczynski?
No.
Vice Chair Nat?
No.
Chair McCoy?
Yes.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, okay.
Five. Michelle?
Yeah. Oh, it's five, two. Yeah.
Five.
The way I scored it. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, we need a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to adjourn.
A second. All favor. Thank you for staying late again, everybody. You seconded it? No. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah.